mine to get her to do our bidding. But you? What a valiant effort you put up, trying to shield them all from us.
Dagdon's mind speared for Lucian's. A dark arrow shot between them. I slammed up a shield between them, and my head, my very bones, ached.
What apple?
I bit out.
The one you shoved down your throat an hour ago, Branna said. Grown and tended in the king's personal garden. Fed a steady diet of water laced with Feybane. Enough to knock out your powers for a few days straight. No shackles required. And here you are, thinking no one had noticed you planned to vanish today.
She clicked her tongue again.
Our uncle would be most displeased if we allowed that to happen.
I was running out of borrowed time. I could winnow. But then I'd abandon Lucian to them if he somehow couldn't manage to winnow himself with the Feybane in his system from the food at the camp. Leave him. I should and could leave him. But to a fate perhaps worse than death. His russet eye gleamed.
Go.
I made my choice. I exploded into night and smoke and shadow. And even 1,000 years wasn't enough for Dagdon to adequately prepare as I winnowed in front of him and struck. I sliced through the front of his leather armor, not deep enough to kill, and as steel snagged on its plates, he twisted expertly, forcing me to either expose my right side or lose the knife. I winnowed again. This time, Dagdon went with me. I wasn't fighting Hybern cronies unaware in the woods. I wasn't fighting the adder and its ilk in the streets of Valaris. Dagdon was a Hybern prince, a commander. He fought like one. Winnow, strike, winnow, strike. We were a black whirlwind of steel and shadow through the clearing, and months of Cassian's brutal training clicked into place as I kept my feet under me. I had the vague sense of Lucian gaping, even Branna taken aback by my show of skill against her brother. But Dagdon's blows weren't hard. No, they were precise and swift, but he didn't throw himself into it wholly. Buying time. Wearing me down until my body fully absorbed that apple, and its power rendered me nearly mortal. So, I hit him where he was the weakest. Branna screamed as a wall of flame slammed into her. Dagdon lost his focus for all of a heartbeat. His roar as I sliced deep into his abdomen shook the birds from the trees.
You little bitch, he spat,
dancing back from my next blow as the fire cleared and Branna was revealed on her knees. Her physical shield had been sloppy. She'd expected me to attack her mind. She was shuddering, gasping with agony. The reek of charred skin now drifted to us, directly from her right arm, her ribs, her thigh. Dagdon lunged for me again, and I brought up both of my knives to meet his blade. He didn't pull the blow this time. I felt its reverberation in every inch of my body. Felt the rising, stifling silence, too. I'd felt it once before, that day in Hybern. Branna surged to her feet with a sharp cry, but Lucian was there. Her focus wholly on me, on taking from me the beauty I'd burned from her, she didn't see him winnow until it was too late. Until Lucian's sword refracted the light of the sun leaking through the canopy, and then met flesh and bone. A tremor shuddered through the clearing, like some thread between the twins had been snipped, as Branna's dark head thudded onto the grass. Dagdon screamed, launching himself at Lucian, winnowing across the 15 feet between us. Lucian had barely heaved his blade out of Branna's severed neck when Dagnet was before him, sword shoving forward to run him through the throat. Lucian only had enough time to stumble back from Dagdon's killing blow. I had enough time to stop it. I parried Dagdon's blade aside with my knife, the male's eyes going wide as I winnowed between them, and punched my other knife into his eye, right into the skull behind it.
Bone and blood and soft flesh scraped and slid along the blade. Thagden's mouth still open with surprise as I yanked out the knife. I let him fall atop his sister. The thud of flesh on flesh, the only sound. I merely looked at Ianthe, my power guttering, a hideous ache building in my gut, and made my last command, amending my earlier ones. You tell them I killed them, in self-defense, after they hurt me so badly, while you and Tamlin did nothing. Even when they torture you for the truth, you say that I fled after I killed them, to save this court from their horrors. Blank, vacant eyes were my only answer.
Feyre.
Lucian's voice was a hoarse rasp. I merely wiped my two knives on Dagden's back before going to reclaim my fallen pack. You're going back to the Night Court. I shouldered my heavy pack and finally looked at him. Yes. His tan face had paled, but he surveyed Ianthe, the two dead royals. I'm going with you. No, was all I said, heading for the trees. A cramp formed deep in my belly. I had to get away, had to use the last of my power to winnow to the hills. You won't make it without magic, he warned me. I just gritted my teeth against the sharp pain in my abdomen as I rallied my strength to winnow to those distant foothills, but Lucian gripped my arm, halting me. I'm going with you, he said again, face splattered with blood as bright as his hair. I'm getting my mate back. There was no time for this argument, for the truth and debate and the answers I saw he desperately wanted. Tamlin and the others would have heard the shouting by now. Don't make me regret this, I told him. Blood coated the inside of my mouth by the time we reached the foothills hours later. I was panting, my head throbbing, my stomach a twisting knot of aching. Lucian was barely better off, his winnowing as shaky as my own before we halted amongst the rolling green and he doubled over, hands braced on his knees. It's gone, he said, gasping for breath. My magic. Not an ember. They must have dosed all of us today. And given me a poisoned apple just to make sure it kept me down. My power pulled away from me like a wave reeling back from the shore. Only there was no return. It just went farther and farther out into the sea of nothing. I peered at the sun, now a hand's width above the horizon, shadows already thick and heavy between the hills. I took my bearings, sorting through the knowledge I'd compiled these weeks. I took a step northward, swaying a bit. Lucian grabbed my arm. You're taking a door? I slid aching eyes toward him. Yes. The caves, doors, they called them, in those hollows led to other pockets of Prithian. I'd taken one straight under the mountain. I would now take one to get me home. Or as close as I could get. No door to the Night Court existed, here or anywhere. And I wouldn't risk my friends by bringing them here to retrieve me, no matter the bond between Rhys and me. I couldn't so much as feel it. A numbness had spread through me. I needed to get out. Now. The Autumn Court portal is that way. Warning and reproach. I can't go into summer. They'll kill me on sight. Silence. He let go of my arm. I swallowed, my throat so dry I could barely do so. The only other door here leads under the mountain. We sealed off all the other entrances. If we go there, we could wind up trapped. Or have to return. Then we go to Autumn, and from there... I trailed off before I finished. Home. But Lucian gleaned it anyway, and seemed to realize then. That's what the Night Court was. Home. I could almost see the word in his russet eye as he shook his head. Later. I gave him a silent nod. Yes, later. We'd have it all out. The Autumn Court will be as dangerous as summer, he warned.
I just need somewhere to hide, to lie low until we can winnow again.
A faint buzzing and ringing filled my ears, and I felt my magic vanish entirely.
I know a place, Lucian said, walking toward the cave that would take us to his home. To the lands of the family who'd betrayed him as badly as this court had betrayed mine.
We hurried through the hills, swift and silent as shadows. The cave to the Autumn Court had been left unguarded.
Lucian looked at me over his shoulder as if to ask if I too had been responsible for the lack of guards who were always stationed here.
I gave him another nod. I'd slid into their minds before we'd left, making sure this door would be left open. Cassian had taught me to always have a second escape route. Always. Lucian paused before the swirling gloom of the cave mouth. The blackness, like a worm, poised to devour us both. A muscle feathered in his jaw. I said,
Stay, if you want. What's done is done.
For Highburn was coming, already here. I had debated it for weeks, whether it was better to claim the Spring Court for ourselves or to let it fall to our enemies. But it could not remain neutral. A barrier between our forces in the north and the humans in the south. It would have been easy to call in Rhys and Cassian, and to have the latter bring in an Illyrian region to claim the territory when it was weakest after my own maneuverings, depending on how much mobility Cassian had retained, if he was still healing. Yet then we'd hold one territory, with five other courts between us. Sympathy might have swayed for the Spring Court. Others might have joined Highburn against us, considering our conquest here proof of our wickedness. But if Spring fell to Highburn, we could rally the other courts to us. Charge as one from the north, drawing Highburn in close.
You were right, Lucian declared at last. That girl I knew did die under the mountain.
I wasn't sure if it was an insult, but I nodded all the same. At least we can agree on that. I stepped into the awaiting cold and dark. Lucian fell into step beside me, as we strode beneath the archway of carved, crude stone, our blades out as we left behind the warmth and green of eternal spring. And in the distance, so faint, I thought I might have imagined it, a beast's roar cleaved the land.
Part 2. Cursebreaker. Chapter 11. The cold was what hit me first. Brisk, crisp cold, laced with loam and rotting things. In the twilight, the world beyond the narrow cave mouth was a latticework of red and gold and brown and green. The trees thick and old, the mossy ground strewn with rocks and boulders that cast long shadows. We emerged, blades out, barely breathing beyond a trickle of air. But there were no Autumn Court sentries guarding the entrance to Baron's realm, none that we could see or scent. Without my magic, I was blind again, unable to sweep a net of awareness through the ancient, vibrant trees to pick up any traces of nearby Fey mines. Utterly helpless. That's how I'd been before, how I'd survived so long without it, I didn't want to consider. We crept on cat-soft feet into the moss and stone and wood, our breath curling in front of us. Keep moving. Keep striding north. Rhys would have realized by now that our bond had gone dark, was likely trying to glean whether I had planned for that,
whether it was worth the risk of revealing our scheming to find me. But until he did, until he could hear me, find me, I had to keep moving. So I let Lucian lead the way, wishing I'd at least been able to shift my eyes to something that could pierce the darkening wood. But my magic was still and frozen, a crutch I'd become too reliant upon. We picked our way through the forest, the chill deepening with each vanishing shaft of sunlight. We hadn't spoken since we'd entered that cave between courts. From the stiffness of his shoulders, the hard angle of his jaw as he moved on silent, steady feet, I knew only our need for stealth kept his simmering questions at bay. Night was fully overhead, the moon not yet risen when he led us into another cave. I balked at the entrance. Lucian merely said, voice flat and as icy as the air, "It doesn't lead anywhere. It curves away in the back. It'll keep us out of sight." I let him go inside first, nonetheless. Every limb and movement turned sluggish, aching, but I trailed him into the cave and around the bend he'd indicated. Flint struck, and I found myself gazing at a makeshift camp of sorts. The candle Lucian had ignited sat on a natural stone ledge. On the floor lay three bedrolls and old blankets, crusted with leaves and cobwebs. A little fire pit lay in the sloped center of the space, the ceiling above it charred. No one had been here in months. Years. "I used to stay here while hunting, before I left," he said, examining a dusty leather-bound book left on the stone ledge beside the candle. He set the tome down with a thump. "It's just for the night. We'll find something to eat in the morning." I only picked up the nearest bedroll and smacked it a few times, leaves and clouds of dust flying off before I laid it upon the ground. "You truly planned this," he said at last. I sat on the bedroll and began sorting through my pack, hauling out the warmer clothes, food, and supplies Alice herself had placed within. "Yes."
"That's all you have to say?"
I sniffed at the food, wondering what was laced with Feybane. It could be in everything. "It's too risky to eat," I admitted, evading his question. Lucian was having none of it.
I knew you were lying the moment you unleashed that light in Highburn. My friend at the Dawn Court has the same power. Her light is identical. And it does not do whatever horseshit you lied about it doing.
I shoved my pack off my bedroll.
"Then why not tell him? You were his faithful dog in every other sense."
His eye seemed to simmer, as if being in his own land set that molten ore inside him rising to the surface, even with the damper on his power.
"Glad to see the mask is off, at least."
Indeed. I let him see it all, didn't alter or shape my face into anything but coldness. Lucian snorted.
"I didn't tell him for two reasons. One, it felt like kicking a male already down. I couldn't take that hope away from him."
I rolled my eyes.
"Two," he snapped. "I knew if I was correct and called you on it, you'd find a way to make sure I never saw her."
My nails dug into my palms hard enough to hurt, but I remained seated on the bedroll as I bared my teeth at him.
"And that's why you're here. Not because it's right, and he's always been wrong, but just so you can get what you think you're owed. She is my mate, and in my enemy's hands. I've made no secret from the start that Elaine is safe and cared for. And I'm supposed to believe you."
"Yes," I hissed. "You are, because if I believed for one moment that my sisters were in danger, no high lord or king would have kept me from going to save them." He just shook his head, the candlelight dancing over his hair.
"You have the gall to question my priorities regarding Elaine. Yet what was your motive where I was concerned? Did you plan to spare me from your path of destruction because of my genuine friendship, or simply for fear of what it might do to her?
I didn't answer.
Well, what was your grand plan for me before Ianthe interfered?
I pulled at a stray thread in the bedroll.
You would have been fine, was all I said. And what about Tamlin? Did you plan to disembowel him before you left and simply not get the chance?
I ripped the loose thread right out of the bedroll.
I debated it. But?
But I think letting his court collapse around him is a better punishment, certainly longer than an easy death. I slung off Tamlin's bandolier of knives, leather scraping against the rough stone floor.
You're his emissary. Surely you realize that slitting his throat, however satisfying, wouldn't win us many allies in this war.
No. It'd give Hybern too many openings to undermine us. He crossed his arms, digging in for a good long fight. Before he could do just that, I cut in, "I'm tired." And our voices echo. Let's have it out when it's not likely to get us caught and killed. His gaze was a brand. But I ignored it, as I nestled down on the bedroll, the material reeking of dust and rot. I pulled my cloak over me, but didn't close my eyes. I didn't dare sleep. Not when he might very well change his mind. Yet just lying down, not moving, not thinking. Some of the tightness in my body eased. Lucian blew out the candle, and I listened to the sounds of him settling down as well.
My father will hunt you for taking his power if he finds out, he said into the frigid dark, and kill you for learning how to wield it.
He can get in line, was all I said.
My exhaustion was a blanket over my senses, as gray light stained the cave walls. I'd spent most of the night shivering, jolting at every snap and sound in the forest outside, keenly aware of Lucian's movements on his bedroll. From his own haggard face as he sat up, I knew he hadn't slept either, perhaps wondering if I'd abandon him, or if his family would find us first, or mine. We took each other's measure.
What now?
He rasped, scrubbing a broad hand over his face. Rhys had not come. I hadn't heard a whisper of him down the bond. I felt for my magic, but only ashes greeted me. We head north, I said, until the Feybane is out of our systems and we can winnow. Or I could contact Rhys and the others.
My father's court lies northward. We'll have to go to the east or west to avoid it.
No, east takes us too close to the summer court border, and I won't lose time by going too far west. We go straight north.
My father's sentries will easily spot us.
Then we'll have to remain unseen, I said, rising. I dumped the last of the contaminated food from my pack. Let the scavengers have it. Walking through the woods of the autumn court felt like striding inside a jewel box. Even with all that potentially now hunted us, the colors were so vivid, it was an effort not to gawk and gape. By mid-morning, the rime had melted away under the buttery sun to reveal what was suitable for eating. My stomach growled with every step, and Lucian's red hair gleamed like the leaves above us as he scanned the woods for anything to fill our bellies. His woods, by blood and law. He was a son of this forest, and here, he looked crafted from it, for it, even that gold eye. Lucian eventually stopped at a jade stream wending through a granite-flanked gully, a spot, he said, had once been rich with trout. I was in the process of constructing a rudimentary fishing pole when he waded into the stream, boots off and pants rolled to his knees, and caught one with his bare hands. He'd tied his hair up, a few strands of it falling into his face as he swooped down again and threw a second trout onto the sandy bank where I'd been trying to find a substitute for fishing twine. We remained silent as the fish eventually stopped flapping, their sides catching and gleaming with all the colors so bright above us. Lucian picked them up by their tails, as if he'd done it 1,000 times.
He might very well have, right here in this stream.
I'll clean them while you start the fire.
In the daylight, the glow of the flames wouldn't be noticed, though the smoke, a necessary risk. We worked and ate in silence, the crackling fire offering the only conversation. We hiked north for 5 days, hardly exchanging a word. Baron's seat was so vast, it took us 3 days to enter, pass through, and clear it.
Lucian led us through the outskirts, tense at every call and rustle.
The forest house was a sprawling complex, Lucian informed me during the few times we risked or bothered to speak to each other. It had been built in and around the trees and rocks, and only its uppermost levels were visible above the ground. Below, it tunneled a few levels into the stone, but its sprawl generated its size. You might walk from one end of the house to the other, and it would take you half the morning. There were layers and circles of sentries ringing it, in the trees, on the ground, atop the moss-coated shingles and stones of the house itself. No enemies approached Baron's home without his knowledge. None left without his permission. I knew we'd passed beyond Lucian's known map of their patrol routes and stations when his shoulders sagged. Mine were slumped already. I'd barely slept, only letting myself do so when Lucian's breathing slid into a different, deeper rhythm. I knew I couldn't keep it up for long, but without the ability to shield, to sense any danger. I wondered if Rhys was looking for me, if he'd felt the silence. I should have gotten a message out, told him I was going and how to find me. The Feybane. That was why the bond had sounded so muffled. Perhaps I should have killed Ianthe outright. But what was done was done. I was rubbing at my aching eyes, taking a moment's rest beneath our new bounty, an apple tree laden with fat, succulent fruit. I'd filled my bag with what I could fit inside. 2 cores already lay discarded beside me, the sweet rotting scent as lulling as the droning of the bees gorging themselves on fallen apples. A 3rd apple was already primed and poised for eating atop my outstretched legs. After what the Highburn Royals had done, I should have sworn off apples forever, but hunger had always blurred lines for me. Lucian, sitting a few feet away, chucked his 4th apple into the bushes as I bit into mine. "The farmlands and fields are near," he announced. "We'll have to stay out of sight. My father doesn't pay well for his crops, and the land workers will earn any bit of extra coin they can."
"Even selling out the location of one of the High Lord's sons?"
"Especially that way."
"They didn't like you."
His jaw tightened.
"As the youngest of 7 sons, I wasn't particularly needed or wanted. Perhaps it was a good thing. I was able to study for longer than my father allowed my brothers before shoving them out the door to rule over some territory within our lands. And I could train for as long as I liked, since no one believed I'd be dumb enough to kill my way up the long list of heirs. And when I grew bored with studying and fighting, I learned what I could of the land from its people. Learned about the people, too."
He eased to his feet with a groan, his unbound hair glimmering as the midday sun overhead set the blood and wine hues aglow.
"I'd say that sounds more High Lord-like than the life of an idle, unwanted son."
A long, steely look.
"Did you think it was mere hatred that prompted my brothers to do their best to break and kill me?"
Despite myself, a shudder rippled down my spine. I finished off the apple, uncoiled to my feet, plucking another off a low-hanging branch.
"Would you want it? Your father's crown?"
"No one's ever asked me that,"
Lucian mused as we moved on, dodging fallen, rotting apples. The air was sticky sweet.
The bloodshed that would be required to earn that crown wouldn't be worth it.
Neither would its festering court. I'd gain a crown, only to rule over a crafty, two-faced people.
Lord of foxes, I said, snorting as I remembered that mask he'd once worn. But you never answered my question about why the people here would sell you out. The air ahead lightened, and a golden field of barley undulated toward a distant tree line.
After Jesminda, they would.
Jesminda. He'd never spoken her name. Lucian slid between the swaying, bobbing stalks.
She was one of them.
The words were barely audible over the sighing barley.
And when I didn't protect her, it was a betrayal of their trust, too. I ran to some of their houses while fleeing my brothers. They turned me out for what I let happen to her.
Waves of gold and ivory rolled around us, the sky a crisp, unmarred blue.
I can't blame them for it, he said.
We cleared the fertile valley by the late afternoon. When Lucian offered to stop for the night, I insisted we keep going, right into the steep foothills that leaped into gray, snow-capped mountains that marked the start of the shared range with the Winter Court. If we could get over the border in a day or two, perhaps my powers would have returned enough to contact Rhys, or winnow the rest of the way home. The hike wasn't an easy one. Great, craggy boulders made up the ascent, flecked with moss and long white grasses that hissed like adders. The wind ripped at our hair, and temperature dropping the higher we climbed. Tonight, we might have to risk a fire tonight, just to stay alive. Lucian was panting as we scaled a hulking boulder, the valley sprawling away behind, the wood a tangled river of color beyond it. There had to be a pass into the range at some point, out of sight.
How are you not winded? He panted, hauling himself onto the flat top.
I shoved back the hair that had torn free of my braid to whip my face. I trained.
I gathered that much after you took on Dagdon and walked away from it.
I had the element of surprise on my side.
No,
Lucian said quietly as I reached for a foothold in the next boulder.
That was all you.
My nails barked as I dug my fingers into the rock and heaved myself up. Lucian added,
You had my back, with them, with Ianthe. Thank you.
The words hit something low in my gut, and I was glad for the wind that kept roaring around us, if only to hide the burning in my eyes. I slept, finally. With the crackling fire in our latest cave, the heat and the relative remoteness were enough to finally drag me under. And in my dreams, I think I swam through Lucian's mind, as if some small ember of my power was at last returning. I dreamed of our cozy fire and the craggy walls, the entire space barely big enough to fit us in the fire. I dreamed of the howling dark night beyond, of all the sounds that Lucian so carefully sorted through while he kept watch. His attention slid to me at one point and lingered. I had never known how young, how human I looked when I slept. My braid was a rope over my shoulder, my mouth slightly parted, my face haggard with days of little rest and food. I dreamed that he removed his cloak and added it over my blanket. Then I ebbed away, flowing out of his head as my dreams shifted and sailed elsewhere. I let a sea of stars rock me into sleep. A hand gripped my face so hard the groaning of my bones jolted me awake.
Look who we found,
a cold male voice drawled. I knew that face, the red hair, the pale skin, the smirk, knew the faces of the other two males in the cave,
a snarling Lucian pinned beneath them. His brothers.
Chapter 12.
Father,
the one now holding a knife to my throat said to Lucian, is rather put out that you didn't stop by to say hello.
We're on an errand and can't be delayed, Lucian answered smoothly, mastering himself.
That knife pressed a fraction harder into my skin as he let out a humorless laugh.
Right. Rumor has it you two have run off together. Cuckolding Tamlin.
His grin widened.
I didn't think you had it in you, little brother. He had it in her, it seems.
One of the others sniggered. I slid my gaze to the male above me.
You will release us.
Our esteemed father wishes to see you,
he said with a snake smile. The knife didn't waver.
So, you will come with us to his home.
Eris, Lucian warned. The name clanged through me. Above me, mere inches away, Moore's former betrothed. The male who had abandoned her when he found her brutalized body on the border. The High Lord's heir. I could have sworn phantom talons bit into my palms. A day or two more and I might have been able to slash them across his throat. But I didn't have that time. I only had now. I had to make it count. Eris merely said to me, cold and bored,
get up.
I felt it then, stirring awake as if some stick had poked it. As if being here, in this territory, amongst its blooded royals, had somehow sparked it to life, boiling past that poison, turning that poison to steam. With his knife still angled against my neck, I let Eris haul me to my feet, the other two dragging Lucian before he could stand on his own.
Make it count. Use my surroundings. I caught Lucian's eye, and he saw the sweat beading on my temple, my upper lip, as my blood heated. A slight bob of his chin was his only sign of understanding. Eris would bring us to Baron, and the High Lord would either kill us for sport, sell us to the highest bidder, or hold us indefinitely. And after what they had done to Lucian's lover, what they'd done to Moore.
After you,
Eris said smoothly, lowering that knife at last. He shoved me a step. I'd been waiting. Balance, Cassian had taught me, was crucial to winning a fight. And as Eris's shove caused him to get on uneven footing, I turned my propelled step on him. Twisting so fast he didn't see me get into his open guard, I drove my elbow into his nose. Eris stumbled back. Flame slammed into the other two, and Lucian hurtled out of the way as they shouted and fell deeper into the cave. I unleashed every drop of the flame in me, a wall of it between us and them, sealing his brothers inside the cave.
Run!
I gasped out, but Lucian was already at my side, a steadying hand under my arm as I burned that flame hotter and hotter. It wouldn't keep them contained for long, and I could indeed feel someone's power rising to challenge mine. But there was another force to wield. Lucian understood the same moment I did. Sweat simmered on Lucian's brow as a pulse of flame-licked power slammed into the stones just above us. Dust and debris rained down. I threw any trickle of magic into Lucian's next blow. His next. As Eris's livid face emerged from my net of flame, glowing like a new-forged god of wrath, Lucian and I brought down the cave ceiling. Fire burst through the small cracks like a thousand flaming serpent's tongues, but the cave-in did not so much as tremble.
Hurry,
Lucian panted, and I didn't waste breath agreeing as we staggered into the night. Our packs, our weapons, our food, all inside that cave. I had two daggers on me. Lucian, one. I'd been wearing my cloak, but he'd indeed given me his. He shivered against the cold as we dragged and clawed our way up the mountain slope and did not dare stop. Had I still remained human, I would have been dead. The cold was bone deep, the screaming wind lashing us like burning whips. My teeth clacked against each other, my fingers so stiff I could scarcely grapple into the icy granite with each mile we staggered through the mountains. Perhaps both of us were spared from an icy death by the kernel of flame that had just barely kindled inside our veins. We didn't pause once, an unspoken fear that if we did, the cold would leech any lingering warmth, and we'd never again move. Or Lucian's brothers would gain ground. I tried over and over to shout down the bond to Rhys, to Winnow, to grow wings and attempt to fly us out of the mountain pass we trudged through. The snow, waist-deep and so densely packed in places, we had to crawl over it, our skin scraped raw from the ice. But the Feybane's stifling grip still held the majority of my power in check. We had to be close to the Winter Court border, I told myself as we squinted against a blast of icy wind through the other end of the narrow mountain pass. Close. And once we were over it, Eris and the others wouldn't dare set foot into another court's territory. My muscles screamed with every step, my boots soaked through with snow, my feet perilously numb. I'd spent enough human winters in the forest to know the dangers of exposure, the threat of cold and wet. Lucian, a step behind me, panted hard as the walls of rock and snow parted to reveal a bitter star-flecked night and more mountains beyond. I almost whimpered.
"We've got to keep going," he said, snow crusting the stray strands of his hair, and I wondered if the sound had indeed left me. Ice tickled my frozen nostrils.
"We can't last long. We need to get warm and rest."
"My brothers,
we will die if we continue,
or lose fingers and toes at best." I pointed to the mountain slope ahead, a hazardous plunge down.
"We can't risk that at night. We need to find a cave and try to make a fire."
"With what?" he snapped. "Do you see any wood?"
I only continued on, arguing just wasted energy and time. And I didn't have an answer anyway. I wondered if we'd make it through the night. We found a cave, deep and shielded from wind or sight. Lucian and I carefully covered our tracks, making sure the wind blew in our favor, veiling our scents. That was where our luck ran out. No wood to be found, no fire in either of our veins. So we used our only option, body heat. Huddled in the farthest reaches of the cave, we sat thigh to thigh and arm to arm beneath my cloak, shuddering with cold and dripping wet. I could scarcely hear the hollow scream of the wind over my chattering teeth, and his.
"Find me! Find me! Find me!" I tried shouting down that bond, but my mate's wry voice didn't answer. There was only the roaring void.
"Tell me about her. About Elaine,"
Lucian said quietly, as if the death that squatted in the dark beside us had drawn his thoughts to his own mate as well. I debated not saying anything, shaking too hard to dredge up speech, but
"She loves her garden. Always loved growing things. Even when we were destitute, she managed to tend a little garden in the warmer months. And when our fortune returned, she took to tending and planting the most beautiful gardens you've ever seen, even in Prithian.
It drove the servants mad because they were supposed to do the work, and ladies were only meant to clip a rose here and there, but Elaine would put on a hat and gloves and kneel in the dirt, weeding. She acted like a purebred lady, in every regard but that.
Lucian was silent for a long moment.
"Acted," he murmured. "You talk about her as if she's dead."
"I don't know what changes the cauldron wrought on her. I don't think going home is an option, no matter how she might yearn to."
"Surely Prithian is a better alternative. War or no."
I steeled myself before saying, "She is engaged, Lucian." I felt every inch of him go stiff beside me.
"To whom?"
Flat, cold words, with a threat of violence simmering beneath. "To a human lord's son? The lord hates fairies, has dedicated his life and wealth to hunting them. Us. I was told that, though it's a love match, her betrothed father was keen to have access to her considerable dowry to continue his crusade against fairy kind."
"Elaine loves this lord's son."
Not quite a question. "She says she does. Nesta thought the father and his obsession with killing fairies was bad enough to raise some alarms. She never voiced the concern to Elaine. Neither did I."
"My mate is engaged to a human male."
He spoke more to himself than to me. "I'm sorry if..."
"I want to see her. Just once. Just to know."
"To know what?" He hitched my damp cloak higher around us.
"If she's worth fighting for."
I couldn't bring myself to say she was. To give him that sort of hope, when Elaine might very well do everything in her power to hold to her engagement, even if immortality had already rendered it impossible. Lucian leaned his head back against the rock wall behind us.
"And then I'll ask your mate how he survived it. Knowing you were engaged to someone else. Sharing another male's bed."
I tucked my freezing hands under my arms, gazing toward the gloom ahead.
"Tell me, when you knew,"
he demanded, his knee pressing into mine.
"That Rhysand was your mate. Tell me when you stopped loving Tamlin and started loving him instead."
I chose not to answer.
"Was it going on before you even left?"
I whipped my head to him, even if I could barely make out his features in the dark. "I never touched Rhysand like that until months later."
"You kissed under the mountain."
"I had as little choice in that as I did in the dancing."
"And yet this is the male you now love."
He didn't know. He had no inkling of the personal history, the secrets that had opened my heart to the High Lord of the Night Court. They were not my stories to tell. "One would think, Lucian, that you'd be glad I fell in love with my mate, given that you're in the same situation Rhys was in 6 months ago."
"You left us."
"Us. Not Tamlin. Us." The words echoed into the dark, toward the howling wind and lashing snow beyond the bend. "I told you that day in the woods. You abandoned me long before I ever physically left." I shivered again, hating every point of contact that I so desperately needed his warmth. "You fit into the spring court as little as I did, Lucian. You enjoyed its pleasures and diversions, but don't pretend you weren't made for something more than that." His metal eye whirred.
"And where exactly do you believe I will fit in? The Night Court?" I didn't answer.
I didn't have one, honestly. As High Lady, I could likely offer him a position, if we survived long enough to make it home. I'd do it mostly to keep Elaine from ever going to the Spring Court. But I had little doubt Lucian would be able to hold his own against my friends. And some small, horrible part of me enjoyed the thought of taking one more thing away from Tamlin. Something vital. Something essential. "We should leave at dawn," was my only reply. We lasted the night. Every part of me was stiff and aching when we began our careful trek down the mountain. Not a whisper or trace of Lucian's brothers, or any sort of life. I didn't care, not when we at last passed over the border and into Wintercourt lands. Beyond the mountain, a great ice plain sparkled into the distance. It would take days to cross, but it didn't matter. I'd awoken with enough power in my veins to warm us with a small fire. Slowly, so slowly, the effects of the Fae-bane ebbed. I was willing to wager that we'd be halfway across the ice by the time we could winnow out of here, if our luck held and no one else found us. I ran through every lesson Rhys had taught me about the Winter Court and its High Lord Kalias. Towering, exquisite palaces, full of roaring hearths and bedecked in evergreens. Carved sleighs were the court's preferred method of transportation, hauled by velvet-antlered reindeer, whose splayed hooves were ideal for the ice and snow. Their forces were well-trained, but they often relied on the great white bears that stalked the realm for any unwanted visitors. I prayed none of them waited on the ice, their coats perfectly blended into the terrain. The Night Court's relationship with winter was fine enough, still tenuous, as all our bonds were after Amarantha, after she'd butchered so many of them, including, I remembered with no small surge of nausea, dozens of Winter Court children. I couldn't imagine it. The loss, the rage and grief. I'd never had the nerve to ask Rhys in those months of training who the children had belonged to, what the consequences had been. If it was considered the worst of Amarantha's crimes, or just one of countless others. But despite any tentative bonds, Winter was one of the seasonal courts. It might side with Tamlin, with Tarquin. Our best allies remained the solar courts, Dawn and Day. But they lay far to the north, above the demarcation line between the solar and seasonal courts. That slice of sacred unclaimed land that held under the mountain. And the Weaver's Cottage. We'd be gone before we ever had to set foot in that lethal ancient forest. It was another day and night before we cleared the mountains entirely and set foot on the thick ice. Nothing grew, and I could only tell when we were on solid land by the dense snow packed beneath. Otherwise, too frequently, the ice was clear as glass, revealing dark, depthless lakes beneath. At least we didn't encounter any of the white bears. But the real threat, we both quickly realized, was the utter lack of shelter. Out on the ice, there was none to be found against the wind and cold, and if we lit a fire with our feeble magic, anyone nearby would spot it. No matter the practicality of lighting a fire atop a frozen lake. The sun was just slipping above the horizon, staining the plain with gold, the shadows still a bruised blue, when Lucian said, "Tonight we'll melt some of the ice pack enough to soften it, and build a shelter." I considered. We were barely 100 feet onto what seemed to be an endless lake. It was impossible to tell where it ended. "You think we'll be out on the ice for that long?" Lucian frowned toward the dawn-stained horizon. "Likely, but who knows how far it extends." Indeed, the snowdrifts hid much of the ice beneath. "Perhaps there's some other way around,"
I mused, glancing back toward our abandoned little camp. We looked at the same time, and both beheld the three figures now standing at the lake edge, smiling. Eris lifted a hand wreathed in flame. Flame, to melt the ice on which we stood. Chapter 13.
Run, Lucian breathed.
I didn't dare take my eyes off his brothers. Not as Eris lowered that hand to the frozen edge of the lake.
Run where, exactly?
Flesh met ice and steam rippled. The ice went opaque, thawing in a line that shot for us. We ran. The slick ice made for a treacherous sprint, my ankles roaring with the effort of keeping me upright. Ahead, the lake stretched on forever, and with the sun barely awake, the dangers would be even harder to spot.
Faster, Lucian ordered. Don't look,
he barked as I began to turn my head to see if they'd followed. He lashed out a hand to grip my elbow, steadying me, before I could even register that I'd stumbled.
Where would we go? Where would we go? Where would we go?
Water splashed beneath my boots. Thawed ice. Eris had to either be expending all his power to get through millennia of ice, or was just doing it slowly to torture us.
Zag, Lucian panted. We need to...
He shoved me aside and I staggered, arms wheeling, just as an arrow ricocheted off the ice where I'd been standing.
Faster,
Lucian snapped, and I didn't hesitate. I hurtled into a flat-out sprint, Lucian and I weaving in and out of each other's paths as those arrows continued firing. Ice sprayed where they landed, and no matter how fast we ran, the ground beneath us melted and melted. Ice. I had ice in my veins, and now that we were over the border of the Winter Court, I didn't care if they saw it. My power. Calias's power. Not when the alternatives were far worse. I threw out a hand before us as a melting splotch began to spread, ice groaning. A spray of ice shot from my palm, freezing the lake once more. With each pump of my arms as I ran, I fired that ice from my palms, solidifying what Eris sought to melt ahead of us. Maybe, just maybe, we could clear the lake. And if they were stupid enough to be atop it when we did, if I could form ice, I could certainly unform it. I crossed paths with Lucian again, meeting his wide eyes as we did, and opened my mouth to tell him my plan when Eris appeared. Not behind, ahead. But it was the other brother at his side, arrow aimed and already flying for me, who drew the shout from my throat. I lunged to the side, rolling. Not fast enough. The arrow's edge sliced the shell of my ear, my cheek, leaving a stinging wake. Lucian shouted, but another arrow was flying. It went clean through my right forearm this time. Ice sliced into my face, my hands as I went down, knees barking, arm shrieking in agony at the impact. Behind, steps thudded on ice as the third brother closed in. I bit my lip hard enough to draw blood as I ripped away the cloth of my jacket and shirt from my forearm, snapped the arrow in two, and tore the pieces from my flesh. My roar shattered and bounced across the ice. Eris had taken one step toward me, smiling like a wolf, when I was up again. My last two Illyrian knives in my palms, my right arm screaming at the movement. Around me, the ice began to melt.
This can end with you going under, begging me to get you out once that ice instantly refreezes,
Eris drawled. Behind him, cut off by his brothers, Lucian had drawn out his own knife and now sized up the other two.
Or, this can end with you agreeing to take my hand. But either way, you will be coming with me.
Already the flesh in my arm was knitting together.
healing, from Dawn's powers reawakening in my veins. And if that was working... I didn't give Eris time to read my move. I sucked in a sharp breath. White, blinding light erupted from me. Eris swore, and I ran. Not toward him, not when I was still too injured to wield my knives, but away, toward that distant shore. Half-blinded myself, I stumbled and staggered until I was clear of the treacherous melting splotches, then sprinted. I made it all of 20 feet before Eris winnowed in front of me and struck. A backhanded blow to the face. So hard, my teeth went through my lip. He struck again before I could even fall, a punch to my gut that ripped the air from my lungs. Beyond me, Lucian had unleashed himself upon his two brothers. Metal and fire blasted and collided, ice spraying. I'd no sooner hit the ice than Eris grabbed me by the hair, right at the roots. The grip so brutal, tears stung my eyes. But he dragged me back toward that shore, back across the ice. I fought against the blow to my gut, fought to get a wisp of air down my throat into my lungs. My boots scraped against the ice as I feebly kicked. Yet Eris held firm. I think Lucian shouted my name. I opened my mouth, but a gag of fire shoved its way between my lips. It didn't burn, but was hot enough to tell me it would if Eris willed it. Equal bands of flame wrapped around my wrists, my ankles, my throat. I couldn't remember. Couldn't remember what to do, how to move, how to stop this. Closer and closer to the shore, to the awaiting party of sentries that winnowed in out of nowhere. No, no, no. A shadow slammed into the earth before us, cracking the ice toward every horizon. Not a shadow. An Illyrian warrior. 7 red siphons glinted over his scaled black armor as Cassian tucked in his wings and snarled at Eris with 5 centuries worth of rage. Not dead. Not hurt. Whole. His wings repaired and strong. I loosed a shuddering sob over the burning gag. Cassian's siphons flickered in response, as if the sight of me at Eris's hand. Another impact struck the ice behind us. Shadows skittered in its wake. Azriel. I began crying in earnest, some leash I'd kept on myself snapping free as my friends landed, as I saw that Azriel too was alive, was healed. As Cassian drew 2 Illyrian blades, the sight of them like home, and said to Eris with lethal calm, "I suggest you drop my lady." Eris's grip on my hair only tightened, wringing a whimper from me. The wrath that twisted Cassian's face was world-ending. But his hazel eyes slid to mine, a silent command. He had spent months training me, not just to attack, but to defend. Had taught me over and over how to get free of a captor's grasp, how to manage not only my body, but my mind. As if he'd known that it was a very real possibility that this scenario would one day happen. Eris had bound my limbs, but I could still move them, still use parts of my magic. And getting him off balance long enough to let go, to let Cassian jump between us, and take on the High Lord's son? Towering over me, Eris didn't so much as glance down as I twisted, spinning on the ice, and slammed my bound legs up between his. He lurched, bending over with a grunt. Right into the fisted, bound hands I drove into his nose. Bone crunched, and his hand sprang free of my hair. I rolled, scrambling away. Cassian was already there. Eris hardly had time to draw his sword as Cassian brought his own down upon him.
Steel against steel rang out across the ice. Sentries on the shore unleashed arrows of wood and magic, only to bounce against a shield of blue. Asriel. Across the ice, he and Lucian were engaging the other two brothers. That any of Lucian's siblings held out against the Illyrians was a testament to their own training, but... I focused the ice in my veins on the gag in my mouth, the binds around my wrists and ankles. Ice to smother fire, to sing it to sleep. Cassian and Eris clashed, danced back, clashed again. Ropes of fire snapped free, dissolving with a hiss of steam. I was on my feet again, reaching for a weapon I did not have. My daggers had been lost 40 feet away. Cassian got past Eris's guard with brutal efficiency, and Eris screamed as the Illyrian blade punched through his gut. Blood, red as rubies, stained the ice and snow. For a heartbeat, I saw how it would play out. 3 of Baron's sons dead at our hands. A temporary satisfaction for me. 5 centuries of satisfaction for Cassian, Asriel, and more. But if Baron still debated what side to support in this war, I had other weapons to use. "Stop," I said. The word was a soft, cold command, and Asriel and Cassian obeyed. Lucian's other two brothers were back to back, bloody and gaping. Lucian himself was panting, sword still raised, as Asriel flicked the blood off his own blade and stalked toward me. I met the hazel eyes of the Shadow Singer, the cool face that hid such pain and kindness. He had come. Cassian had come. The Illyrians fell into place beside me. Eris, a hand pressed to his gut, was breathing wetly, glaring at us. Glaring, then considering. Watching the three of us as I said to Eris, to his other two brothers, to the sentries on the shore, "You all deserve to die for this, and for much, much more. But I am going to spare your miserable lives." Even with a wound through his gut, Eris's lip curled. Cassian snarled his warning. I only removed the glamour I'd kept on myself these weeks. With the sleeve of my jacket and shirt gone, there was nothing but smooth skin where that wound had been. Smooth skin that now became adorned with swirls and whorls of ink. The markings of my new title and my mating bond. Lucian's face drained of color as he strode for us, stopping a healthy distance from Asriel's side. "I am High Lady of the Night Court," I said quietly to them all. Even Eris stopped sneering. His amber eyes widened, something like fear now creeping into them. "There is no such thing as a High Lady," one of Lucian's brothers spat. A faint smile played on my mouth. "There is now. And it was time for the world to know it." I caught Cassian's gaze, finding pride glimmering there, and relief. "Take me home," I ordered him, my chin high and unwavering. Then to Asriel, "Take us both home." I said to the Autumn Court scions, "We'll see you on the battlefield. Let them decide whether it was better to be fighting beside us or against us." I turned to Cassian, who opened his arms and tucked me in tight before launching us skyward in a blast of wings and power. Beside us, Asriel and Lucian did the same. When Eris and the others were nothing but specks of black on white below, when we were sailing high and fast, Cassian observed,
"I don't know who looks more uncomfortable, Az or Lucian Vansera."
I chuckled,
glancing over my shoulder to where the shadow singer carried my friend, both of them making a point not to speak, look, or talk. Vansera?
You never knew his family name?
I met those laughing, fierce hazel eyes. Cassian's smile softened.
Hello, Feyre.
My throat tightened to the point of pain, and I threw my arms around his neck, embracing him tightly.
I missed you too,
Cassian murmured, squeezing me. We flew until we reached the border of the sacred Eighth Territory. And when Cassian set us down in a snowy field before the ancient wood, I took one look at the blonde female in Illyrian leathers pacing between the gnarled trees and launched into a sprint. Moor held me as tightly as I gripped her. Where is he? I asked, refusing to let go, to lift my head from her shoulder. It's a long story. Far away, but racing home, right now. Moor pulled back enough to scan my face. Her mouth tightened at the lingering injuries, and she gently scraped away flecks of dry blood caked on my ear. He picked up on you, the bond, minutes ago. The three of us were closest. I winnowed in Cassian, but with Eris and the others there... Guilt dimmed her eyes. Relations with the Winter Court are strained. We thought if I was out here on the border, it might keep Calias's forces from looking south, at least long enough to get you. And to avoid an interaction with Eris that Moor was perhaps not ready for. I shook my head at the shame still shadowing her usually bright features. I understand. I embraced her again. I understand. Moore's answering squeeze was rib-crushing. Asriel and Lucian landed, plumes of snow spraying in the former's wake. Moor and I released each other at last, my friend's face going grave as she sized up Lucian. Snow and blood and dirt coated him. Coated us both. Cassian explained to Moor.
He fought against Eris and the other two.
Moore's throat bobbed, noting the blood staining Cassian's hands, realizing it wasn't his own. Scenting it, no doubt, as she blurted.
Eris, did you?
He remains alive, Asriel answered. Shadows curling around the clawed tips of his wings, so stark against the snow beneath our boots.
So do the others.
Lucian was glancing between all of them, wary and quiet. What he knew of Moore's history with his eldest brother, I'd never asked. Never wanted to. Moor tossed her mass of golden waves over a shoulder.
Then let's go home.
Which one? I asked carefully. Moor swept her attention over Lucian once more. I almost pitied Lucian for the weight in her gaze, the utter judgment, the stare of the Morrigan, whose gift was pure truth. Whatever she beheld in Lucian was enough for her to say,
The townhouse. You have someone waiting there for you.
Chapter 14. I had not let myself imagine it. The moment I'd again stand in the wood-paneled foyer of the townhouse, when I'd hear the song of the gulls soaring high above Valaris, smell the brine of the Sidra River that winded through the heart of the city, feel the warmth of the sunshine streaming through the windows upon my back. Moor had winnowed us all, and now stood behind me, panting softly, as we watched Lucian survey our surroundings. His metal eye whirred, while the other warily scanned the rooms flanking the foyer, the dining room and sitting room overlooking the little front yard and street, then the stairs to the second level, then the hallway beside it that led to the kitchen and courtyard garden, then finally to the shut front door, to the city waiting beyond.
Cassian took up a place beside the banister, crossing his arms with an arrogance I knew meant trouble. Asriel remained beside me, shadows wreathing his knuckles. As if battling High Lords' sons was how they usually spent their days. I wondered if Lucian knew that his first words here would either damn or save him. I wondered what my role in it would be. No, it was my call. High Lady. I outranked them, my friends. It was my call to make whether Lucian was allowed to keep his freedom. But their watchful silence was indication enough. Let him decide his own fate. At last, Lucian looked at me. At us. He said, "There are children laughing in the streets." I blinked. He said it with such quiet surprise, as if he hadn't heard the sound in a long, long time. I opened my mouth to reply, but someone else spoke for me. That they do so at all after Highburn's attack is testament to how hard the people of Velaris have worked to rebuild. I whirled, finding Amryn emerging from wherever she'd been sitting in the other room, the plush furniture hiding her small body. She appeared exactly as she had the last time I'd seen her, standing in this very foyer, warning us to be careful in Highburn. Her chin-length, jet-black hair gleamed in the sunlight, her silver, unearthly eyes unusually bright as they met mine. The delicate female bowed her head, as much of a gesture of obedience as a 15,000-year-old creature would make to a newly minted high lady. And friend. "I see you brought home a new pet," she said, nose crinkling with distaste. Something like fear had entered Lucian's eye, as if he too beheld the monster that lurked beneath that beautiful face. Indeed, it seemed he had heard of her already. Before I could introduce him, Lucian bowed at the waist, deeply. Cassian let out an amused grunt, and I shot him a warning glare. Amryn smiled slightly. "Already trained, I see." Lucian slowly straightened, as if he were standing before the open maw of some great plains cat he did not wish to startle with sudden movements.
"Amryn, this is Lucian. Vansera."
Lucian stiffened. "I don't use my family's name," he clarified to Amryn with another incline of his head. "Lucian will do." I suspected he'd ceased using that name the moment his lover's heart had stopped beating. Amryn was studying that metal eye. "Clever work," she said, then surveyed me. "Looks like someone clawed you up, girl." The wound in my arm, at least, had healed, though a nasty red mark remained. I assumed my face wasn't much better. Before I could answer her, Lucian asked, "What is this place?" We all looked at him. "Home," I said. "This is my home." I could see the details now sinking in. The lack of darkness. The lack of screaming. The scent of the sea and citrus, not blood and decay. The laughter of children that indeed continued. The greatest secret in Prithian's history. "This is Velaris," I explained. "The city of starlight." His throat bobbed.
"And you are High Lady of the Night Court."
"Indeed she is."
My blood stopped at the voice that drawled from behind me, at the scent that hit me, awoke me. My friends began smiling. I turned. Rhys Sand leaned against the archway into the sitting room, arms crossed, wings nowhere to be seen, dressed in his usual immaculate black jacket and pants. And as those violet eyes met mine,
as that familiar half-smile faded. My face crumpled. A small, broken noise cracked from me. Reese was instantly moving, but my legs had already given out. The foyer carpet cushioned the impact as I sank to my knees. I covered my face with my hands while the past month crashed into me. Reese knelt before me, knee to knee. Gently, he pulled my hands away from my face. Gently, he took my cheeks in his hands and brushed away my tears. I didn't care that we had an audience as I lifted my head and beheld the joy and concern and love shining in those remarkable eyes. Neither did Reese as he murmured, "My love," and kissed me. I'd no sooner slid my hands into his hair than he scooped me into his arms and stood in one smooth movement. I pulled my mouth from his, glancing toward a pallid Lucian, but Rassan said to our companions, without so much as looking at them, "Go find somewhere else to be for a while." He didn't wait to see if they obeyed. Reese winnowed us up the stairs and launched into a steady, swift walk down the hallway. I peered down at the foyer in time to spy Moore grabbing Lucian's arm and nodding to the others before they all vanished.
"Do you want to go over what happened at the Spring Court?" I asked, voice raw as I studied my mate's face.
No amusement, nothing but that predatory intensity focused on my every breath. "There are other things I'd rather do first." He carried me into our bedroom. Once his room, now full of our belongings. It was exactly as I'd last seen it. The enormous bed that he now strode for, the two armoires, the desk by the window that overlooked the courtyard garden, now bursting with purple and pink and blue amid the lush greens. I braced myself to be sprawled on the bed, but Reese paused halfway across the room, the door snicking shut on a star-kissed wind. Slowly, he set me on the plush carpet, blatantly sliding me down his body as he did so, as if he was as powerless to resist touching me, as reluctant to let go, as I was with him. And every place where our bodies met, all of him so warm and solid and real, I savored it, my throat tight as I placed a hand on his sculpted chest, the thunderous heartbeat beneath his black jacket echoing into my palm. The only sign of whatever torrent coursed through him as he skimmed his hands up my arms in a lingering caress and gripped my shoulders. His thumbs stroked a gentle rhythm over my filthy clothes as he scanned my face. Beautiful. He was even more beautiful than I had remembered, dreamed of during those weeks at the Spring Court. For a long moment, we only breathed in each other's air. For a long moment, all I could do was take the scent of him deep into my lungs, letting it settle inside me. My fingers tightened on his jacket. "Mate. My mate." As if he'd heard it down the bond, Reese finally murmured, "When the bond went dark, I thought. Fear." Genuine terror shadowed his eyes, even as his thumbs continued stroking my shoulders, gentle and steady. "By the time I got to the Spring Court, you'd vanished. Tamlin was raging through that forest hunting for you, but you hid your scent. And even I couldn't find you." The snag in his words was a knife to my gut. "We went to the Autumn Court through one of the doors," I said, setting my other hand on his arm. The corded muscles beneath shifted at my touch. "You couldn't find me because two Highburn commanders drugged my food and drink with Feybane. Enough to extinguish my powers. I still don't have full use." Cold rage now flickered across that beautiful face as his thumbs halted at my shoulders. "You killed them." Not entirely a question, but I nodded.
Good.
I swallowed. Has Highburn sacked the Spring Court?
Not yet. Whatever you did, it worked.
Tamlin's sentries abandoned him. Over half his people refused to appear for the tithe 2 days ago. Some are leaving for other courts. Some are murmuring of rebellion.
It seems you made yourself quite beloved.
Holy, even. Amusement at last warmed his features.
They were rather upset when they believed he'd allowed Highburn to terrorize you into fleeing.
I traced the faint silver whorl of embroidery on the breast of his jacket, and I could have sworn he shuddered beneath the touch.
I suppose they'll learn soon enough I'm well cared for.
Rhys's hands tightened on my shoulders in agreement, as if he were about to show me just how well cared for I was, but I angled my head.
What about Ianthe? And Jurian?
Rhysand's powerful chest heaved beneath my hand as he blew out a breath.
Reports are murky on both. Jurian, it seems, has returned to the hand that feeds him. Ianthe?
Rhys lifted his brows.
I assume her hand is courtesy of you and not the commander's.
She fell, I said sweetly.
Must have been some fall,
he mused, a dark smile dancing on those lips as he drifted even closer, the heat of his body seeping into me while his hands migrated from my shoulders to brush lazy lines down my back. I bit my lip, focusing on his words and not the urge to arch into the touch, to bury my face in his chest, and to do some exploring of my own.
She's currently convalescing after her ordeal, apparently. Won't leave her temple.
It was my turn to murmur. Good. Perhaps one of those pretty acolytes of hers would get sick of her sanctimonious bullshit and smother Ianthe in her sleep. I braced my hands on his hips, fully ready to slide beneath his jacket, needing to touch bare skin, but Rhys straightened, pulling back. Still close enough that one of his hands remained on my waist, but the other. He reached for my arm, gently examining the angry welt where my skin had been torn by an arrow. Darkness rumbled in the corner of the room.
Cassian let me into his mind just now, to show me what happened on the ice.
He stroked a thumb over the hurt, the touch, feather light.
Eris was always a male of limited days. Now Lucian might find himself closer to inheriting his father's throne than he ever expected to be.
My spine locked. Eris is precisely as horrible as you painted him to be. Rhys's thumb glided over my forearm again, leaving goose flesh in its wake. A promise. Not of the retribution he was contemplating, but of what awaited us in his room, the bed a few feet away, until he murmured,
"You declared yourself High Lady."
Was I not supposed to? He released my arm to brush his knuckles across my cheek.
I've wanted to roar it from the rooftops of Valaris from the moment the priestess anointed you. How typical of you to upend my grand plans.
A smile tugged on my lips. It happened less than an hour ago. I'm sure you could go crow from the chimney right now, and everyone would give you credit for breaking the news. His fingers threaded through my hair, tilting my face up. That wicked smile grew, and my toes curled in their boots.
There's my darling Farah.
His head dipped, his gaze fixated on my mouth, hunger lighting those violet eyes. Where are my sisters? The thought clanged through me, jarring as a pealing bell. Rhys paused, hand slipping from my hair as his smile faded.
At the House of Wind.
He straightened, swallowing, as if it somehow checked him.
I can take you to them.
Every word seemed to be an effort. But he would, I realized. He'd shove down his need for me and take me to them, if that was what I wanted. My choice. It had always been my choice with him. I shook my head. I wouldn't see them, not yet. Not until I was steady enough to face them.
Farewell, though?
His hesitation told me enough.
They're safe.
Not really an answer, but I wasn't going to fool myself into thinking my sisters would be thriving. I leaned my brow against his chest. Cassian and Azrael are healed, I murmured against his jacket, breathing in the scent of him over and over as a tremor shuddered through me.
You told me that. And yet it didn't sink in. Until now.
Rhys ran a hand down my back, the other sliding to grip my hip.
Azrael healed within a few days.
Cassian's wings.
It was complex. But he's been training every day to regain his strength. The healer had to rebuild most of his wings. But he'll be fine.
I swallowed down the tightness in my throat and wrapped my arms around his waist, pressing my face wholly against his chest. His hand tightened on my hip in answer, the other resting at my nape, holding me to him as I breathed.
Mor said you were far away. That was why you weren't there.
I'm sorry I wasn't.
No,
I said, lifting my head to scan his eyes, the guilt dampening them. I didn't mean it like that, I savored the feel of him beneath my palms.
Where were you?
Rhys stilled, and I braced myself as he said casually,
I couldn't very well let you do all the work to undermine our enemies, could I?
I didn't smile. Where were you?
With Az only recently back on his feet, I took it upon myself to do some of his work.
I clenched my jaw. Such as? He leaned down, nuzzling my throat.
Don't you want to comfort your mate, who has missed you terribly these weeks?
I planted a hand on my face and pushed him back, scowling. I want my mate to tell me where the hell he was. Then he can get his comfort. Rhys nipped at my fingers, teeth snapping playfully.
Cruel, beautiful female.
I watched him beneath lowered brows. Rhys rolled his eyes, sighing.
I was on the continent, at the Human Queen's palace.
I choked.
You were where? Technically, I was flying above it, but...
You went alone?
He gaped at me. Despite what our mistakes in Highburn might have suggested, I am capable of.
You went to the human world? To our enemy's compound alone?
I'd rather it be me than any of the others.
That had been his problem from the start. Always him, always sacrificing.
Why?
I demanded.
Why risk it? Is something happening?
Rhys peered toward the window, as if he could see all the way to the mortal lands. His mouth tightened.
It's the quiet on their side of the sea that bothers me. No whisper of armies gathered. No other human allies summoned. Since Highburn, we've heard nothing. So I thought to see for myself why that is.
He flicked my nose, tugging me closer again.
I'd just neared the edge of their territory when I felt the bond awaken again. I knew the others were closer, so I sent them.
You don't need to explain. Rhys rested his chin atop my head.
I wanted to be there. To get you. Find you. Bring you home.
You do certainly enjoy a dramatic entrance. He chuckled. His breath warming my hair as I listened to the sound rumble through his body. Of course he would have been working against Highburn while I was away. Had I expected them all to be sitting on their asses for over a month? And Rhys, constantly plodding, always a step ahead, he would have used this time to his advantage. I debated asking about it, but right now, breathing him in, feeling his warmth, let it wait. Rhys pressed a kiss to my hair.
You're home.
A shuddering small sound came out of me as I nodded, squeezing him tighter. Home. Not just Valaris, but wherever he was, our family was. Ebony claws stroked along the barrier in my mind. In affection and request. I lowered my shields for him, just as his own dropped. His mind curled around mine, as surely as his body now held me.
I missed you every moment,
Rhys said, leaning down to kiss the corner of my mouth.
Your smile.
His lips grazed over the shell of my ear and my back arched slightly.
Your laugh.
He pressed a kiss to my neck, right beneath my ear, and I tilted my head to give him access, fighting down the urge to beg him to take more, to take faster as he murmured,
Your scent.
My eyes fluttered closed, and his hands coasted around my hips to cup my rear, squeezing as he bent to kiss the center of my throat.
The sounds you make when I'm inside you.
His tongue flicked over the spot where he'd kissed, and one of those sounds indeed escaped me. Rhys kissed the hollow of my collarbone, and my core went utterly molten.
My brave, bold, brilliant mate.
He lifted his head, and it was an effort to open my eyes, to meet his stare as his hands roved in lazy lines down my back, over my rear, then up again.
I love you, he said.
And if I hadn't already believed him, felt it in my very bones, the light in his face as he said the words. Tears burned my eyes again, slipping free before I could control myself. Rhys leaned in to lick them away, one after another, as he'd once done under the mountain.
You have a choice,
he murmured against my cheekbone.
Either I lick every inch of you clean.
His hand grazed the tip of my breast, circling lazily, as if we had days and days to do this.
Or you can get into the bath that should be ready by now.
I pulled away, lifting a brow. Are you suggesting that I smell? Rhys smirked, and I could have sworn my core pounded in answer.
Never. But
his eyes darkened, the desire and amusement fading as he took in my clothes.
There's blood on you. Yours and others. I thought I'd be a good mate and offer you a bath before I ravish you wholly.
I huffed a laugh and brushed back his hair, savoring the silken sable strands between my fingers.
So consider it. Though I can't believe you kicked everyone out of the house so you could take me to bed. One of the many benefits to being High Lord.
What a terrible abuse of power. That half-smile danced on his mouth.
Well?
As much as I'd like to see you attempt to lick off a week's worth of dirt, sweat, and blood. His eyes gleamed with the challenge, and I laughed again. Normal bath, please. He had the nerve to look vaguely disappointed. I poked him in the chest as I pushed away, aiming for the large bathing room attached to the bedroom. The massive porcelain tub was already filled with steaming water and...
Bubbles? Do you have a moral objection to them?
I grinned, unbuttoning my jacket. My fingers were near black with dirt and caked blood. I cringed. I might need more than one bath to get clean. He snapped his fingers, and my skin was instantly pristine again. I blinked.
If you can do that, then what's the point of a bath?
He'd done it under the mountain for me a few times, that magical cleaning. I'd somehow never asked. He leaned against the doorway, watching me peel off my torn and stained jacket, as if it were the most important task he'd ever been given.
The essence of the dirt remains.
His voice roughened as he tracked each movement of my fingers while I unlaced my boots.
Like a layer of oil.
Indeed, my skin, while it looked clean, felt unwashed. I kicked off the boots, letting them land on my filthy jacket.
So, it's more for aesthetic purposes.
You're taking too long,
he said, jerking his chin toward the bath. My breasts tightened at the slight growl lacing his words. He watched that, too. And I smiled to myself, arching my back a bit more than necessary as I removed my shirt and tossed it to the marble floor. Sunlight streamed in through the steam rising from the tub, casting the space between us in gold and white. Reese made a low noise that sounded vaguely like a whimper as he took in my bare torso. As he took in my breasts, now heavy and aching, badly enough that I had to swallow my plea to forget this bath entirely. But I pretended not to notice, as I unbuttoned my pants and let them fall to the floor, along with my undergarments. Reese's eyes simmered. I smirked, daring a look at his own pants, at the evidence of what exactly this was doing to him, pressing against the black material with impressive demand. I simply crooned, "Too bad there isn't room in the tub for two."
A design flaw, and one I shall remedy tomorrow.
His voice was rough, quiet, and it slid invisible hands down my breasts, between my legs. Mother save me. I somehow managed to walk, to climb into the tub, somehow managed to remember how to bathe myself. Reese remained leaning against the doorway the entire time, silently watching with that unrelenting focus. I might have taken longer washing certain areas, and might have made sure he saw it. He only gripped the threshold hard enough that the wood groaned beneath his hand. But Reese made no move to pounce, even when I toweled off and brushed out my tangled hair, as if the restraint, it was part of the game, too. My bare toes curled on the marble floor as I set down my brush on the sink vanity, every inch of my body aware of where he stood in the doorway, aware of his eyes upon me in the mirror's reflection.
All clean, I declared, my voice hoarse as I met his stare in the mirror. I could have sworn only darkness and stars swirled beyond his shoulders. A blink and they were gone, but the predatory hunger on his face. I turned, my fingers trembling slightly as I clutched my towel around me. Reese only extended a hand, his own fingers shaking. Even the towel was abrasive against my too sensitive skin as I laid my hand on his calluses scraping as they closed over my fingers. I wanted them scraping all over me. But he simply led me into the bedroom, step after step, the muscles of his broad back shifting beneath his jacket, and lower, the sleek, powerful cut of thighs, his ass. I was going to devour him, from head to toe. I was going to devour him. But Reese paused before the bed, releasing my hand and facing me from the safety of a step away. And it was the expression on his face, as he traced a still tender spot on my cheekbone, that checked the heat threatening to raise my senses. I swallowed, my hair dripping on the carpet. "Is the bruise bad?"
It's nearly gone.
Darkness flickered in the room once more. I scanned that perfect face, every line and angle, the fear and rage and love, the wisdom and cunning and strength. I let my towel drop to the carpet, let him look me over as I put a hand on his chest, his heart raging beneath my palm.
Ready for ravishing?
My words didn't come out with the swagger I'd intended. Not when Reese's answering smile was a dark, cruel thing.
I hardly know where to begin. So many possibilities.
He lifted a finger, and my breath came hard and fast as he idly circled one of my breasts, then the other, in ever-tightening rings.
I could start here,
he murmured. I clenched my thighs together. He noted the movement, that dark smile growing, and just before his finger reached the tip of my breast, just before he gave me what I was about to beg for, his finger slid upward, to my chest, my neck, my chin, right to my mouth. He traced the shape of my lips, a whisper of touch.
Or I could start here.
He breathed, slipping the tip of his finger into my mouth. I couldn't help myself from closing my lips around him, from flicking my tongue against the pad of his finger. But Reese withdrew his finger with a soft groan, making a downward path, along my neck, chest, straight over a nipple. He paused there, flicking it once, then smoothed his thumb over the small hurt. I was shaking now, barely able to keep standing as his finger continued past my breast. He drew patterns on my stomach, scanning my face as he purred, or I couldn't think beyond that single finger, that one point of contact as it drifted lower and lower to where I wanted him. Or I managed to breathe. His head dipped, hair sliding over his brow as he watched. We both watched. His broad finger venture down.
Or I could start here,
he said, the words guttural and raw. I didn't care. Not as he dragged that finger down the center of me. Not as he circled that spot, light and taunting.
Here would be nice,
he observed, his breathing uneven.
Or maybe even here,
he finished, and plunged that finger inside me. I groaned, gripping his arm, nails digging into the muscles beneath, muscles that shifted as he pumped his finger once, twice, then slid it out and drawled, brows rising.
Well, where shall I begin, Farah, darling?
I could barely form words, thoughts, but I'd had enough of playing, so I took that infernal hand of his, guiding it to my heart, and placed it there, half over the curve of my breast. I met his hooded gaze as I spoke the words that I knew would be his undoing in this little game. The words that were rising up in me with every breath.
You're mine.
It snapped the tether he'd kept on himself. His clothes vanished, all of them, and his mouth angled over my own. It wasn't a gentle kiss, wasn't soft or searching. It was claiming, wild and unchecked. It was unleashing. And the taste of him, the heat of him, the demanding stroke of his tongue against my own. Home. I was home. My hands shot into his hair, pulling him closer as I answered each of his searing kisses with my own, unable to get enough, unable to touch and feel enough of him. Skin to skin, Reese nudged me toward the bed,
his hands kneading my rear as I ran my own over the velvet softness of him, over every hard plane and ripple. His beautiful, mighty wings tore from his back, splaying wide before neatly tucking in. My thighs hit the bed behind us, and Rhys paused, trembling, giving me time to reconsider, even now. My heart strained, but I pulled my mouth from his, held his gaze, as I lowered myself onto the white sheets and inched back. Further and further onto the bed, until I was bare before him. Until I took in the considerable, proud length of him, and my core tightened in answer. Rhys, I breathed, his name a plea on my tongue. His wings flared, chest heaving as stars sparked in his eyes, and it was the longing there, beneath the desire, beneath the need. It was the longing in those beautiful eyes that made me glance to the mountains tattooed on his knees. The insignia of this court, our court, the promise that he would kneel for no one and nothing but his crown. And me. Mine. He was mine. I sent the thought down the bond. No playing, no delaying. I wanted him on me, in me. I needed to feel him, hold him, share breath with him. He heard the edge of desperation, felt it through the mating bond flowing between us. His eyes did not leave mine as he prowled over me, every movement graceful as a stalking plains cat. Interlacing our fingers, his breathing uneven, Rhys used a knee to nudge my legs apart and settle between them. Carefully, lovingly, he laid our joined hands beside my head as he guided himself into me and whispered in my ear, "You're mine too." At the first nudge of him, I surged forward to claim his mouth. I dragged my tongue over his teeth, swallowing his groan of pleasure as his hips rolled in gentle thrusts and he pushed in and in and in. Home. This was home. And when Rhys was seated to the hilt, when he paused to let me adjust to the fullness of him, I thought I might explode into moonlight and flame, thought I might die from the sheer force of what swept through me. My pants were edged with sobs as I dug my fingers into his back, and Rhys withdrew slightly to study my face, to read what was there. "Never again," he promised as he pulled out, then thrust back in with excruciating slowness. He kissed my brow, my temple.
"My darling Feyre."
Beyond words, I moved my hips, urging him deeper, harder. Rhys obliged me. With every movement, every shared breath, every whispered endearment and moan, that mating bond I'd hidden so far inside myself grew brighter, clearer. And when it again shone as brilliantly as adamant, my release cascaded through me, leaving my skin glowing like a newborn star in its wake. At the sight of it, right as I dragged a finger down the sensitive inside of his wing, Rhys shouted my name and found his pleasure. I held him through every heaving breath, held him as he at last stilled, lingering inside me, and relished the feel of his skin on mine. For long minutes, we remained there, tangled together, listening to our breathing even out, the sound of it finer than any music. After a while, Rhys lifted his chest enough to take my right hand, to examine the tattoos inked there. He kissed one of the whorls of near black-blue ink. His throat bobbed. "I missed you. Every second, every breath. Not just this," he said, shifting his hips for emphasis and dragging a groan from deep in my throat. "But talking to you, laughing with you, I missed having you in my bed, but
missed having you as my friend even more.
My eyes burned.
I know, I managed to say, stroking a hand down his wings, his back. I know. I kissed his bare shoulder, right over a whorl of Illyrian tattoo. Never again, I promised him, and whispered it over and over as the sunlight drifted across the floor.
Chapter 15. My sisters had been living in the House of Wind since they'd arrived in Valaris. They didn't leave the palace, built into the upper parts of a flat-topped mountain overlooking the city. They didn't ask for anything or anyone, so I would go to them. Lucian was waiting in the sitting room when Rhys and I came downstairs at last, my mate having given the silent order for them to return. Unsurprisingly, Cassian and Asriel were casually seated in the dining room across the hall, eating lunch and marking every single breath Lucian emitted. Cassian smirked at me, brows flicking up. I shot him a warning glare that dared him to comment. Asriel, thankfully, just kicked Cassian under the table. Cassian gawked at Asriel, as if to declare, I wasn't going to say anything, while I approached the open archway into the sitting room, Lucian rising to his feet. I fought my cringe as I halted in the threshold. Lucian was still in his travel-worn, filthy clothes. His face and hands, at least, were clean, but I should have gotten him something else, remembered to offer him. The thought rippled away into nothing as Rhys appeared at my side. Lucian did not bother to hide the slight curling of his lip, as if he could see the mating bond glowing between Rhys and me. His eyes, both russet and golden, slid down my body, to my hand, to the ring now on my finger, at the star sapphire sky bright against the silver. A simple silver band sat on Rhysand's matching finger. We'd slid them onto each other's hands before coming downstairs, more intimate and searing than any publicly made vows. I'd told Rhys before we did so that I had half a mind to deposit his ring at the weaver's cottage and make him retrieve it. He'd laughed and said that if I truly felt it was necessary to settle the score between us, perhaps I could find some other creature for him to battle, one that wouldn't delight in removing my favorite part from his body. I'd only kissed him, murmuring something about someone thinking rather highly of themselves, and had placed the ring he'd selected for himself, bought here in Valaris while I'd been away, onto his finger. Any joy, any lingering laughter from that moment, those silent vows, it curled up like leaves in a fire as Lucian sneered at our rings. How close we stood. I swallowed. Rhys noted it too. It was impossible to miss. My mate leaned against the carved archway and drawled to Lucian, I assume Cassian or Asriel has explained that if you threaten anyone in this house, this territory, we'll show you ways to die you've never even imagined. Indeed, the Illyrians smirked from where they lingered in the dining room threshold. Asriel was by far the more terrifying of the pair. Something twisted in my gut at the threat, the smooth, sleek aggression. Lucian had been my friend. He wasn't my enemy, not entirely. But, Rhys continued, sliding his hands into his pockets,
I can understand how difficult this past month has been for you. I know Feyre explained we aren't exactly as rumor suggests.
I'd led him into my mind before we'd come down, shown him all that had occurred at the Spring Court. But hearing it and seeing it are two different things. He shrugged with one shoulder.
Elaine has been cared for. Her participation in life here has been entirely her choice. No one but us and a few trusted servants have entered the House of Wind.
Lucian remained silent,
I was in love with Feyre,
Rhys said quietly,
long before she ever returned the feeling.
Lucian crossed his arms.
How fortunate you got what you wanted in the end.
I closed my eyes for a heartbeat. Cassian and Asriel stilled, waiting for the order.
I will only say this once, warned the High Lord of the Night Court. Even Lucian flinched.
I suspected Feyre was my mate before I ever knew she was involved with Tamlin.
And when I learned of it, if it made her happy, I was willing to step back. You came to our house and stole her away on her wedding day.
I was going to call the wedding off, I cut in, taking a step toward Lucian.
You knew it.
Rhysand went on before Lucian could snap a reply.
I was willing to lose my mate to another male. I was willing to let them marry, if it brought her joy. But what I was not willing to do was let her suffer, to let her fade away into a shadow. And the moment that piece of shit blew apart his study, the moment he locked her in that house...
His wings ripped from him and Lucian started. Rhys bared his teeth. My limbs turned light, trembling at the dark power curling in the corners of the room. Not fear, never fear of him, but at the shattered control as Rhys snarled at Lucian.
My mate may one day find it in herself to forgive him, forgive you, but I will never forget how it felt to sense her terror in those moments.
My cheeks heated, especially as Cassian and Asriel stalked closer. Those hazel eyes now filled with a mix of sympathy and wrath.
I never talked about it to them, what had gone on that day Tamlin had destroyed his study, or the day he'd sealed me inside the manor. I'd never asked Rhys if he'd informed them. From the fury rippling from Cassian, the cold rage seeping from Asriel, I didn't think so. Lucian, to his credit, didn't back away a step. From Rhys, or me, or the Illyrians. The clever fox stares down winged death. The painting flashed into my mind. So again, I will say this only once.
Rhys went on, his expression smoothing into lethal calm, dragging me from the colors and light and shadows gathering in my mind.
Feyre did not dishonor or betray Tamlin.
I revealed the mating bond months later, and she gave me hell for it, don't worry. But now that you've found your mate in a similar situation, perhaps you will try to understand how it felt. And if you can't be bothered, then I hope you're wise enough to keep your mouth shut. Because the next time you look at my mate with that disdain and disgust, I won't bother to explain it again, and I will rip out your fucking throat.
Rhys said it so mildly that the threat took a second to register, to settle in me like a stone plunked into a pool. Lucian only shifted on his feet, wary, considering. I counted the heartbeats, debating how much I'd interfere if he said something truly stupid, when he at last murmured,
"There is a longer story to be told, it seems."
Smart answer. The rage ebbed from Rhys's face, and Cassian's and Asriel's shoulders relaxed ever so slightly.
Just once, Lucian had said to me during those days on the run. That was all he wanted, to see Elaine only once. And then, I'd have to figure out what to do with him.
Unless my mate already had some plan in motion. One look at Rhys, who lifted his brows as if to say, "He's all yours," told me it was my call. But until then, I cleared my throat. "I'm going to see my sisters up at the house," I said to Lucian, whose eyes snapped to mine, the metal one tightening and whirring. I forced a grim smile to my face. "Would you like to come?" Lucian weighed my offer, and the three males monitoring his every blink and breath. He only nodded. Another wise decision. We were gone within minutes, the quick walk up to the roof of the townhouse serving as Lucian's tour of my home. I didn't bother point out the bedrooms.
Lucian certainly didn't ask. Asriel left us as we took to the skies, murmuring that he had some pressing business to attend to. From the glare Cassian gave him, I wondered if the Shadow Singer had invented it to avoid carrying Lucian to the House of Wind. But Rhys's subtle nod to Asriel told me enough. There were indeed matters afoot. Plans in motion, as they always were. And once I finished visiting my sisters, I'd get answers of my own. So Cassian bore a stone-faced Lucian into the skies, and Rhys swept me into his arms, shooting us gracefully into the cloudless blue. With every wing beat, with every deep inhale of the citrus and salt breeze, some tightness in my body uncoiled. Even if every wing beat brought us closer to the house looming above Valaris, to my sisters. The House of Wind had been carved into the red, sun-warmed stone of the flat-topped mountains that lurked over one edge of the city, with countless balconies and patios jutting to overhang the 1,000-foot drop to the valley floor. Valaris's winding streets flowed right to the sheer wall of the mountain itself, and snaking through it wove the Sidra, a glittering, bright band in the midday sun. As we landed on the veranda that edged our usual dining room, Cassian and Lucian alighting behind us, I let it sink in. The city, and the river, and the distant sea, the jagged mountains on the other side of Valaris, and the blazing blue of the sky above. And the House of Wind, my other home. The grand formal sister to the townhouse, our public home, I supposed, where we would hold meetings and receive guests who weren't family. A far more pleasant alternative to my other residence, the Court of Nightmares. At least there I could stay in the Moonstone Palace high atop the mountain under which the hewn city had been built, though the people I'd rule over. I shut them from my thoughts as I adjusted my braid, tucking in strands that had been whipped free by the gentle wind Rhys had allowed through his shield while flying. Lucian just walked to the balcony rail and stared out. I didn't quite blame him. I glanced over a shoulder to where Rhys and Cassian now stood. Rhys lifted a brow.
Wait inside.
Rhys's smile was sharp.
So you won't have any witnesses when you push him over the railing?
I gave him an incredulous look and strode for Lucian. Rhys's murmur to Cassian about getting a drink in the dining room, the only indication of their departure. That, and the near silent opening and closing of the glass doors that led into the dining room beyond. The same room where I'd first met most of them. My new family. I came up beside Lucian, the wind ripping strands of his red hair free from where he'd tied it at his nape.
This isn't what I expected,
he said, taking in the sprawl of Valaris. The city is still rebuilding after the Highburn attack. His eyes dropped to the carved balcony rail.
Even though we had no part in that. I'm sorry, but that's not what I meant.
He glanced behind us to where Rhys and Cassian waited inside the dining room, drinks now in hand, leaning all too casually against the giant oak table in its center. They became immensely interested in some spot or stain on the surface between them. I scowled at them, but swallowed. And even though my sisters waited inside, even though the urge to see them was so tangible, I wouldn't have been surprised to find a rope tugging me into the house. I said to Lucian, Rhys saved my life on Kalan Mai. So I told him. All of it. The story that perhaps would help him understand and realize how truly safe Elaine was. He now was. I eventually summoned Rhys to explain his own history, and he gave Lucian the barest details. None of the vulnerable, sorrowful bits that had reduced me to tears in that mountain cabin, but it painted a clear enough picture. Lucian said nothing while Rhys spoke, or when I continued with my tale, Cassian often chiming in with his own account of how it had been to live with two mated yet unmated people, to pretend Rhys wasn't courting me, to welcome me into their little circle. I didn't know how long had passed when we finished,
though Rhys and Cassian used the time to unabashedly sun their wings by an open balcony ledge. I left off our story at Highburn, at the day I'd gone back to the Spring Court. Silence fell, and Rhys and Cassian again walked away, understanding the emotion swimming in Lucian's eye, the meaning of the long breath he blew out. When we were alone, Lucian rubbed his eyes.
I've seen Rhysand do such horrible things. Seen him play the Dark Prince over and over. And yet you tell me it was all a lie. A mask. All to protect this place, these people. And I would have laughed at you for believing it, and yet this city exists. Untouched. Or until recently, I suppose. Even the Dawn Court cities are nothing so lovely as this.
Lucian.
And you love him. And he truly does love you.
Lucian dragged a hand through his red hair.
And all these people I've spent my centuries hating, even fearing, they're your family.
I think Amryn would probably deny that she feels any affection for us. Amryn is a bedtime story they told us as younglings to make us behave. Amryn was who would drink my blood and carry me to hell if I acted out of line. And yet, there she was, acting more like a cranky old aunt than anything.
We don't enforce protocol and rank here.
Obviously. Rhys lives in a townhouse by the cauldron.
He waved an arm to encompass the city. I didn't know what to say, so I kept silent.
I hadn't realized I was a villain in your narrative.
Lucian breathed. You weren't. Not entirely. The sun danced on the distant sea, turning the horizon into a glittering sprawl of light. She doesn't know anything about you. Only the basics that Rhys gave her. You are a High Lord's son, serving in the Spring Court. And you helped me under the mountain. Nothing else. I didn't add that Rhys had told me my sister hadn't asked about him at all. I straightened. I would like to see them first. I know you're anxious.
Just do it,
Lucian said, bracing his forearms on the stone rail of the veranda.
Come get me when she's ready.
I almost patted his shoulder. Almost said something reassuring. But words failed me again as I headed for the dim interior of the house. Rhys had given Nesta and Elaine a suite of connecting rooms, all with views overlooking the city and river and distant mountains beyond. But it was in the family library that Rhys tracked down Nesta. There was a coiled, razor-sharp tension in Cassian as the three of us strode down the stairways of the house, the red stone halls dim and echoing with the rustle of Cassian's wings and the faint howl of wind rattling at every window. A tension that grew more taut with every step toward the double doors of the library. I hadn't asked if they had seen each other or spoken since that day in Highburn. Cassian volunteered no information. And I might have asked Rhys down the bond had he not opened one of the doors. Had I not immediately spied Nesta curled in an armchair, a book on her knees, looking, for once, very un-Nesta-like. Casual. Perhaps relaxed. Perfectly content to be alone. The moment my shoes scuffed against the stone floor, she shot straight up, back going stiff, closing her book with a muffled thud. Yet her gray-blue eyes didn't so much as widen as they beheld me, as I took her in. Nesta had been beautiful as a human woman. As High Fae, she was devastating. From the utter stillness with which Cassian stood beside me, I wondered if he thought the same thing. She was in a pewter-colored gown, its make simple, yet the material fine. Her hair was braided over the crown of her head, accentuating her long, pale neck, a neck Cassian's eyes darted to, then quickly away from, as she sized us up and said to me, You're back. With her hair styled like that, it hid the pointed ears. But there was nothing to hide the ethereal grace as she took one step. As her focus again returned to Cassian, and she added, "What do you want?" I felt the blow like a punch to my gut. "At least immortality hasn't changed some things about you." Nesta's look was nothing short of icy. "Is there a purpose to this visit, or may I return to my book?" Rhys's hand brushed mine in silent comfort, but his face, hard as stone, and even less amused. But Cassian sauntered over to Nesta, a half-smile spreading across his face. She stood stiffly while he picked up the book, read the title, and chuckled.
"I wouldn't have begged you for a romance reader."
She gave him a withering glare. Cassian leafed through the pages and drawled to me,
"You haven't missed much while you were off destroying our enemies, Farah. It's mostly been this."
Nesta whirled to me. "You accomplished it?" I clenched my jaw. "We'll see how it plays out. I made sure Ianthes suffered." At the hint of rage and fear that crept into Nesta's eyes, I amended, "Not enough, though." I glanced at her hand, the one she'd pointed with at the King of Highburn. Rhys had mentioned no signs of special powers from either of my sisters. Yet that day in Highburn, when Nesta had opened her eyes, I had seen it. Seen something great and terrible within them. "And again, why are you here?" She snatched her book from Cassian, who allowed her to do so, but remained standing beside her, watching every breath, every blink. "I wanted to see you," I said quietly. "See how you were doing. See if I've accepted my lot and found myself grateful for becoming one of them." I steeled my spine. "You're my sister. I watched them hurt you. I wanted to see if you were all right." A low, bitter laugh. But she turned to Cassian, looked him over as if she were a queen on a throne, and then declared to all of us, "What do I care? I get to be young and beautiful forever. And I never have to go back to those sycophantic fools over the wall. I get to do as I wish. Since apparently no one here has any regard for rules, or manners, or our traditions, perhaps I should thank you for dragging me into this." Rhys put a hand on the small of my back before the words even struck their target. Nesta snorted. "But it's not me you should be checking on. I had as little at stake on the other side of the wall as I do here." Hate rippled over her features. Enough hate that I felt sick. Nesta hissed, "She will not leave her room. She will not stop crying. She will not eat or sleep or drink." Rhys's jaw clenched. "I have asked you over and over if you needed. Why should I allow any of you?" The last word was shot at Cassian with as much venom as a pit viper. "To get near her. It is no one's business but our own." "Elaine's mate is here," I said. And it was the wrong thing to utter in Nesta's presence. She went white with rage. "He is no such thing to her," she snarled, advancing on me enough that Rhys slid a shield into place between us. As if he, too, had glimpsed that mighty power in her eyes that day in Highburn, and did not know how it would manifest. "If you bring that male anywhere near her, I'll..."
"You'll what?"
Cassian crooned, trailing her at a casual pace as she stopped perhaps 5 feet from me. He lifted a brow as she whirled on him.
"You won't join me for practice, so you sure as hell aren't going to hold your own in a fight. You won't talk about your power, so you certainly aren't going to be able to wield them. And you..."
"Shut your mouth," she snapped, every inch the conquering empress. "I told you to stay the hell away from me, and if you..."
You come between a male and his mate, Nesta Archeron, and you're going to learn about the consequences the hard way.
Nesta's nostrils flared. Cassian only gave her a crooked grin. I cut in. If Elaine is not up for it, then she won't see him. I won't force the meeting on her. But he does wish to see her, Nesta. I'll ask on his behalf, but the decision will be hers. The male who sold us out to Highburn. It's more complicated than that.
Well, it will certainly be more complicated when Father returns and finds us gone. What do you plan to tell him about all this?
Seeing as he hasn't sent word from the continent in months, I'll worry about that later, I sniped back, and thank the cauldron for it, that he was off trading in some lucrative territory. Nesta only shook her head, turning toward the chair and her book.
I don't care. Do what you want.
A stinging dismissal, if not admission that she still trusted me enough to consider Elaine's needs first. Rhys jerked his chin at Cassian in a silent order to leave, and I followed them. I said softly, I'm sorry, Nesta. She didn't answer as she sat stiffly in her chair, picked up her book, and dutifully ignored us. A blow to the face would have been better. When I looked ahead, I found Cassian staring back at Nesta as well. I wondered why no one had yet mentioned what now shone in Cassian's eyes as he gazed at my sister. The sorrow and the longing. The suite was filled with sunlight. Every curtain shoved back as far as it could go, to let in as much sun as possible. As if any bit of darkness was abhorrent, as if to chase it away. And seated in a small chair before the sunniest of windows, her back to us, was Elaine. Where Nesta had been in contented silence before we found her, Elaine's silence was hollow, empty. Her hair was down, not even braided. I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen it unbound. She wore a moon-white silk dressing robe. She did not look, or speak, or even flinch as we entered. Her two thin arms rested on her chair, that iron engagement ring still encircled her finger. Her skin was so pale, it looked like fresh snow in the harsh light. I realized then that the color of death, of sorrow, was white. The lack of color, of vibrancy. I left Cassian and Rhys by the door. Nesta's rage was better than this shell, this void. My breath caught as I edged around her chair, beheld the city view she stared so blankly at, then beheld the hollowed-out cheeks, the bloodless lips, the brown eyes that had once been rich and warm and now seemed utterly dull, like grave dirt. She didn't so much as look at me as I said softly, Elaine? I didn't dare reach for her hand. I didn't dare get too close. I had done this. I had brought this upon them. I'm back, I added, a bit limply, uselessly. All she said was, I want to go home. I closed my eyes. My chest unbearably tight. I know. He'll be looking for me, she whispered. I know, I said again. Not Lucien. She wasn't talking about him at all.
We were supposed to be married next week. I put a hand on my chest, as if it had stopped the cracking in there. I'm sorry.
Nothing. Not even a flicker of emotion.
Everyone keeps saying that.
Her thumb brushed the ring on her finger.
But it doesn't fix anything, does it?
I couldn't get enough air in. I couldn't breathe, looking at this broken, carved-out thing my sister had become. What I'd robbed her of, what I'd taken from her. Reese was there, an arm sliding around my waist.
Can we get you anything, Elaine?
He spoke with such gentleness I could barely stand it.
I want to go home,
she repeated. I couldn't ask her. About Lucian, not now, not yet. I turned away, fully prepared to bolt and completely fall apart in another room, another section of the house. But Lucian was standing in the doorway. And from the devastation on his face, I knew he'd heard every word. Seen and heard and felt the hollowness and despair radiating from her. Elaine had always been gentle and sweet, and I'd considered it a different sort of strength, a better strength, to look at the hardness of the world and choose over and over to love, to be kind. She had been always so full of light. Perhaps that was why now she kept all the curtains open, to fill the void that existed where all of that light had once been. And now, nothing remained. Chapter 16. Rhysand silently led Lucian to the suite he'd been occupying at the opposite end of the House of Wind. Cassian and I trailed behind, none of us speaking until my mate opened a set of onyx doors to reveal a sunny sitting room carved from more red stone. Beyond the wall of windows, the city flowed far below, the view stretching to the distant jagged mountains and glittering sea. Rhys paused in the center of a midnight blue hand-woven rug and gestured to the sealed doors on his left. Bedroom? He waved a lazy hand toward the single door on the opposite wall. Bathing room. Lucian surveyed it all with cool indifference. What he felt about Elaine, what he planned to do, I didn't want to ask. I assume you'll need clothes, Rhys went on, nodding toward Lucian's filthy jacket and pants, which he'd worn for the past week while we scrambled through territories. Indeed, that was blood splattered in several spots.
Any preferences for attire?
That drew Lucian's attention, the male shifting enough to take in Rhys, to note Cassian and me lurking in the doorway.
Is there a cost? If you're trying to say that you have no money, don't worry. The clothes are complimentary.
Rhys gave him a half smile.
If you're trying to ask if this is some sort of bribe,
a shrug.
You are a High Lord's son. It would be bad manners not to house and clothe you in your time of need.
Lucian bristled. Stop baiting him, I shot down the bond.
But it's so fun, came the purred reply.
Something had rattled him, rattled Rhys enough that taunting Lucian was an easy way to take the edge off. I stepped closer, Cassian remaining behind me as I told Lucian, we'll be back for dinner in a few hours. Rest a while, bathe. If you need anything, pull that rope by the door. Lucian stiffened. Not at what I'd said, I realized, but at the tone. A hostess. But he asked, what of Elaine?
Your call,
Rhys offered. I need to think about it, I answered plainly. Until I figure out what to do with her, with Nesta, stay out of their way, I added, perhaps too tightly. This house is warded against winnowing, both from outside and within. There's one way out, the stairs to the city. It too is warded and guarded. Please don't do anything stupid.
So am I a prisoner?
I could feel the response simmering in Rhys, but I shook my head. No, but understand, while you may be her mate, Elaine is my sister. I'll do what I must to protect her from further harm.
I would never hurt her.
A bleak sort of honesty in his words. I simply nodded, loosening a breath, and met Rhysand's stare in silent urging. My mate gave no indication of my wordless plea as he said, You are free to wander where you wish. Into the city itself, if you feel like braving the stairs. But there are two conditions. You are not to take either sister, and you are not to enter their floor. If you require a book from the library, you will ask the servants. If you wish to speak to Elaine or Nesta, you will also ask the servants, who will ask us. If you disregard those rules, I'll lock you in a room with Amryn. Then Rhys turned away, hands sliding into his pockets as he offered his hooked elbow to me. I looped my arm through his, but said to Lucien, "We'll see you in a few hours." We were almost to the door, Cassian already in the hall, when Lucien said to me, "Thank you." I didn't dare ask him for what. We flew right to Amryn's loft, more than a few people waving as we soared over the rooftops of Valaris. My smile wasn't faked when I waved back to them, my people. Rhys only held me a bit tighter while I did so, his own smile as bright as the sun on the Sidra. Mor and Asriel were already waiting inside Amryn's apartment, seated like scolded children on the threadbare divan against the wall, while the dark-haired female flipped through the pages of books sprawled around her on the floor. Mor gave me a grateful, relieved look as we entered, Asriel's own face revealing nothing while he stood, keeping a careful, too casual distance from her side. But it was Amryn who said from the floor, "You should kill Baron and his sons, and set up the handsome one as High Lord of Autumn, self-imposed exile or no. It will make life easier."
"I'll take that into consideration,"
Rhys said, striding toward her while I remained with the others. If they were hanging back, Amryn had to be in some mood. I blew out a breath. "Who else thinks it's a terrible idea to leave the three of them up at the House of Wind?" Cassian raised his hand as Rhys and Mor chuckled. The High Lord's general said,
"I give him an hour before he tries to see her."
30 minutes, Mor countered, sitting back down on the divan and crossing her legs. I cringed. I guarantee Nesta is now guarding Elaine. I think she might honestly kill him if he so much as tries to touch her.
"Not without training, she won't,"
Cassian grumbled, tucking in his wings as he claimed the seat beside Mor that Asriel had vacated. The Shadow Singer didn't so much as look at it. No, Asriel just walked to the wall beside Cassian and leaned against the wood paneling. But Rhys and the others remained quiet enough that I knew to proceed carefully as I asked Cassian, "Nesta spoke as if you've been up at the house often. You've offered to train her?" Cassian's hazel eyes shuddered as he crossed a booted ankle over another, stretching his muscled legs before him.
"I go up there every other day. It's good exercise for my wings."
Those wings shifted in emphasis. Not a scratch marred them. "And?"
"And what you saw in the library is a pleasanter version of the conversation we always have."
Moore's lips pressed into a thin line, as if she was trying her best not to say anything. Asriel was trying his best to shoot a warning stare at Mor to remind her to indeed keep her mouth shut, as if they'd already discussed this many times.
"I don't blame her,"
Cassian said, shrugging despite his words.
"She was violated. Her body stopped belonging wholly to her."
His jaw clenched. Even Amryn didn't dare say anything.
"And I am going to peel the King of Highburn's skin off his bones the next time I see him."
His siphons flickered in answer. Rhys said casually,
"I'm sure the king will thoroughly enjoy the experience."
Cassian glowered.
"I mean it." "Oh, I have no doubt that you do."
Rhys's violet eyes were dazzling in the dimness of the loft.
"But before you lose yourself in plans for revenge, do remember that we have a war to plan first." "Asshole."
A corner of my mate's mouth tugged upward, and Rhys was goading him. working Cassian into a temper to keep that brittle edge of guilt from consuming him. The others letting him take on the task, likely having done it several times themselves these weeks.
I am most definitely that, Rhys said. But the fact still remains that revenge is secondary to winning this war.
Cassian opened his mouth, as if he'd keep arguing, but Rhys peered at the book scattered on the lush carpet.
Nothing? He asked Amarin.
I don't know why you sent those two buffoons, a narrowed glance toward Mor and Asriel, to monitor me.
So this was where Asriel had gone, right to the loft, to no doubt spare Mor from enduring Amarin duty alone. But Amarin's tone, cranky, yes, but perhaps a bit of affront, too, to banish that too fragile gleam in Cassian's eyes.
We're not monitoring you, Mor said, tapping her foot on the carpet.
We're monitoring the book.
And as she said it, I felt it, heard it. Amarin had placed the Book of Breathings on her nightstand, a glass of old blood atop it. I didn't know whether to laugh or cringe. The latter won out as the book murmured,
Hello, sweet-faced liar. Hello, princess with...
Oh, be quiet, Amarin hissed toward the book, who shut up.
Odious thing, she muttered, and went back to the tome before her.
Rhys gave me a wry smile.
Since the two halves of the book were joined back together, it has been known to speak every now and then.
What does it say?
Utter nonsense, Amarin spat, scowling at the book.
It just likes to hear itself talk, like most of the people cramping up my apartment.
Cassian smirked.
Did someone forget to feed Amarin again?
She pointed a warning finger at him without so much as looking up.
Is there a reason, Rhysand, why you dragged your yapping pack into my home?
Her home was little more than a giant converted attic, but none of us dared argue, as Mor, Cassian, and Asriel finally came closer, forming a small circle around Amarin's sprawl in the center of the room. Rhys said to me,
The information you got from Dagdan and Branna confirms what we've been gathering ourselves while you were gone, especially Highburn's potential allies in other territories, on the continent.
Vultures,
Mor muttered, and Cassian looked inclined to agree. But Rhys had indeed been spying, while Asriel had been. Rhys snorted.
I can stay hidden, mate.
I glared at him. But Asriel cut in.
Having Highburn's movements confirmed by you, Feyre, is what we needed.
Why? Cassian crossed his arms.
We barely stand a chance of surviving Highburn's armies on our own.
If armies from Valahan, Montessere, and Rask join them?
He drew a line across his tan throat. Mor elbowed him in the ribs. Cassian nudged her right back, as Asriel shook his head at both of them, shadows coiling around the tips of his wings.
Are those three territories that powerful?
Perhaps it was a foolish question, showing how little I knew of the fairy lands on the continent.
Yes, Asriel said, no judgment in his hazel eyes.
Valahan has the numbers, Montessere has the money, and Rask... It is large enough to have both.
And we have no potential allies amongst the other overseas territories? Rhys pulled at a stray thread on the cuff of his black jacket.
Not ones that would sail here to help.
My stomach turned. What of Miriam and Draken? He'd once refused to consider, but...
You fought for Miriam and Draken centuries ago. I said to Rhys.
He'd done a great deal more than that, if Jurian was to be believed.
Perhaps it's time to call in that debt.
But Rhys shook his head.
We tried.
Asriel went to Cretea, the island where Miriam, Draken, and their unified human and fae peoples had secretly lived for the past 5 centuries. It was abandoned, Asriel said, in ruin, with no trace of what happened or where they went.
You think Highburn?
There was no sign of Highburn, or of any harm, Moore cut in, her face taut. They had been her friends, too, during the war. Miriam and Draken, and the human queens who had gotten the treaty signed. And it was worry, true, deep worry, that guttered in her brown eyes, in all their eyes.
Then, do you think they heard about Highburn and ran? I asked.
Draken had a winged legion, Rhys had once told me, if there was any chance of finding them.
The Draken and Miriam I knew wouldn't have run. Not from this, Rhys said.
Moore leaned forward, her golden hair spilling over her shoulders.
But with Jurian now a player in this conflict, Miriam and Draken, whether they like it or not, have always been tied to him. I don't blame them for running, if he truly hunts them.
Rhys's face slackened for a heartbeat.
That is what the King of Highburn has on Jurian,
he murmured.
Why Jurian works for him.
My brow furrowed.
Miriam died, a spear through her chest during the last battle at the sea,
Rhys explained.
She bled out while she was carried to safety. But Draken knew of a sacred, hidden island where an object of great and terrible power had been concealed. An object made by the cauldron itself, legend claimed. He brought her there, to Cretea. Used the item to resurrect her, make her immortal.
As you were made, Feyre.
Amryn had said it, months ago, that Miriam had been made as I was. Amryn seemed to remember it, too, as she said,
The King of Highburn must have promised Jurian to use the cauldron to track the item, to where Miriam and Draken now live. Perhaps they figured that out, and left as fast as they could.
And for revenge, for that insane rage that hounded Jurian, he'd do whatever the King of Highburn asked, so he could kill Miriam himself.
But where did they go?
I looked to Asriel, the Shadow Singer still standing with preternatural stillness against the wall.
You found no trace at all of where they might have vanished to?
None,
Rhys answered for him.
We've sent messengers back since, to no avail.
I rubbed at my face, sealing off that path of hope. Then, if they're not a possible ally, how do we keep those other territories on the continent from joining with Highburn, from sending their armies here? I winced.
That's our plan, isn't it?
Rhys smiled grimly.
It is. One we've been working on while you were away.
I waited, trying not to pace as Amryn's silver eyes seemed to glow with amusement.
I looked at Highburn first, at its people, as best I could.
He'd gone to Highburn?
Rhys smirked at the concern flaring across my face.
I'd hoped that Highburn might have some internal conflict to exploit, to get them to collapse from within, that its people might not want this war, might see it as costly and dangerous and unnecessary. But 500 years on that island, with little trade, little opportunity. Highburn's people are hungry for change. Or rather, a change back to the old days, when they had human slaves to do their work, when there were no barriers keeping them from what they now perceive as their right.
Amryn slammed shut the book she'd been perusing.
Fools.
She shook her head, inky hair swaying, as she scowled up at me.
Highburn's wealth has been dwindling for centuries. Most of their trade routes before the war dealt with the South, with the Blackland. But once it went to the humans,
We don't know if Highburn's king deliberately failed to establish new trade routes and opportunities for his people in order to one day fuel this war, or if he was just that short-sighted and let everything fall apart. But for centuries now, Highburn's people have been festering. Highburn let their resentment of their growing stagnation and poverty fester.
There are many High Fae, Moore said carefully, who believed before the war, and still believe now, that humans, that they are property. There were many High Fae who knew nothing but privilege thanks to those slaves, and when that privilege was ripped away from them, when they were forced to leave their homelands, or forced to make room for other High Fae and reform territories, create new ones, above that wall, they have not forgotten that anger. Even centuries later, especially not in places like Highburn, where their territory and population remained mostly untouched by change. They were one of the few who didn't have to yield any land to the wall, and didn't yield any land to the Fae territories now looking for a new home. Isolated, growing poorer, with no slaves to do their labor. Highburn has long viewed the days before the war as a golden era, and these centuries since, as a dark age. I rubbed at my chest.
They're all insane to think that.
Rhys nodded.
Yes, they certainly are. But don't forget that their king has encouraged these limited worldviews. He didn't expand their trade routes, didn't allow other territories to take any of his land and bring their cultures. He considered where things went wrong for the loyalists in the war. How they ultimately yielded not from being overwhelmed, but because they began arguing amongst themselves. Highburn has had a long, long while to think on those mistakes, and how to avoid them at any cost. So he made sure his people are completely for this war, completely for the idea of the wall coming down, because they think it will somehow restore this gilded vision of the past. Highburn's people see their king and their armies not as conquerors, but as liberators of High Fae and those who stand with them.
Nausea churned in my gut. How can anyone believe that?
Asriel ran a scarred hand through his hair. That's what we've been learning, listening in Highburn, and in territories like Rask and Monacer and Valahan.
We're to be made an example of, girl, Amryn explained. Frithian, we were among the fiercest defenders and negotiators of the treaty. Highburn wants to claim Prithian not only to clear the path to the continent, but to make an example of what happens to High Fae territories that defend the treaty.
But surely other territories would protect it, I said, scanning their faces.
Not as many as we'd hoped, Rhys admitted, wincing. There are many, too many, who have also felt squashed and suffocated during these centuries. They want their old lands back beneath the wall, and the power and prosperity that came with it. Their vision of the past has been colored by 500 years of struggling to adjust and thrive.
Perhaps we did them a disservice, Moore mused, in not sharing enough of our wealth, our territory. Perhaps we are to blame for allowing some of this to rot and fester. That remains to be discussed, Amryn said, waving a delicate hand. The point is that we are not facing an army hell-bent on destruction. They're hell-bent on what they believe is liberation. Of High Fae stifled by the wall and what they believe still belongs to them.
I swallowed.
So how do the other territories play into it? The three Highburn claims will ally with him.
I looked between Rhys and Asriel.
You said you were over there?
Rhys shrugged. Over there, in Highburn, in the other territories.
He winked at my gaping mouth.
I had to keep myself busy to avoid missing you. Moore rolled her eyes. But it was Cassian who said,
"We can't afford to let those three territories join with Highburn. If they send armies to Prithian, we're done."
"So what do we do?" Rhys leaned against the carved post of Amarin's bed.
"We've been keeping them busy."
He jerked his chin to Azrael.
"We planted information, truth and lies, and a blend of both, for them to find. And also scattered some of it among our old allies, who are now balking at supporting us."
Azrael's smile was a slash of white. Lies and truth. The Shadow Singer and his spies had sowed them in foreign courts. My brow narrowed.
"You've been playing the territories on the continent off each other?"
"We've been making sure that they're kept busy with each other,"
Cassian said, a hint of wicked humor glinting in his hazel eyes.
"Making sure that longtime enemies and rival nations of Rask, Valahan, and Montessere have suddenly received information that has them worried about being attacked and raising their own defenses, which in turn has made Rask, Valahan, and Montessere start looking toward their own borders and not our own."
"If our allies from the war are too scared to come here to fight," Moore said, folding her arms up over her chest, "then as long as they're keeping the others occupied, keeping them from sailing here, we don't care." I blinked at them. At Rhys.
Brilliant. Utterly brilliant. To keep them so focused and fearful of each other that they stayed away.
So, they won't be coming?
"We can only pray," Amarin said. "And pray we deal with this fast enough that they don't figure out we've played them all."
"What of the human queens, though?" I chewed on the tip of my thumb. "They have to be aware that no bargain with Highburn would ultimately work to their advantage."
Moore braced her forearms on her thighs.
"Who knows what Highburn promised them, lied about? He already granted them immortality through the cauldron in exchange for their cooperation. If they were foolish enough to agree to it, then I don't doubt they've already thrown open the gates to him."
"But we don't know that for certain," Amarin countered. "And none of it explains why they've been so quiet, locked up in that palace."
Rhys and Azrael shook their heads in silent confirmation. I surveyed them, their fading amusement. "It drives you mad, doesn't it? That no one has been able to get inside that palace." A low growl from both of them before Azrael muttered, "You have no idea." Amarin just clicked her tongue, her upswept eyes settling on me. "Those Highburn commanders were fools to reveal their plans in regard to breaking the wall. Or perhaps they knew the information would return to us, and their master wants us to stew."
I angled my head.
"You mean shattering the wall through the holes already in it?" A bob of her sharp chin as she gestured to the books around her. "It's complex spell work, a loophole through the magic that binds the wall."
"And it implies," Moore said, frowning deeply, "that something might be amiss with the cauldron."
I raised my brows, considering.
"Because the cauldron should be able to bring that wall down on its own, right?"
"Right," Rhysand said, striding to the book on the nightstand. He didn't dare touch it.
"Why bother seeking out those holes to help the cauldron when he could unleash its power and be done with it?"
"Maybe he used too much of his power transforming my sisters and those queens."
"It's likely," Rhys said, stalking back to my side. "But if he's going to exploit those tears in the wall, we need to find a way to fix them before he can act."
I asked Amarin, "Are there spells to patch it up?"
"I'm looking," she said through her teeth. "It'd help if someone dragged their ass to a library to do more research."
We are at your disposal,
Cassian offered with a mock bow. I wasn't aware you could read, Amryn said sweetly.
It could be a fool's errand, Azriel cut in before Cassian could voice the retort dancing in his eyes. To get us focused on the wall as a decoy, while he strikes from another direction.
I grimaced at the book.
Why not just try to nullify the cauldron again?
Because it nearly killed you the last time,
Rhys said in a sort of calm, steady voice that told me enough. There was no way in hell he'd risk attempting it again. I straightened. I wasn't prepared in Highburn. None of us were. If I tried again...
Moore cut in.
If you tried again, it might very well kill you. Not to mention, we'd have to actually get to the cauldron, which isn't an option.
The king, Azriel clarified at my furrowed brow, won't allow the cauldron out of his sight, and he's rigged it with more spells and traps than the last time. I opened my mouth to object, but the shadow singer added, we looked into it. It's not a viable path. I believed him. The stark honesty in those hazel eyes was confirmation enough that they'd weighed it thoroughly.
Well, if it's too risky to nullify the cauldron, I mused, then can I somehow fix the wall? If the wall was made by fairies coming together, and my very magic is a blend of so many...
Amryn considered in the silence that fell. Perhaps. The relationship would be tenuous, but... Yes, perhaps you could patch it up. Though your sisters, directly forged by the cauldron itself, might bear the sort of magic we...
My sisters play no part in this.
Another beat of silence, interrupted only by the rustle of Azriel's wings.
I asked them to help once, and look what happened. I won't risk them again.
Amryn snorted. You sound exactly like Tamlin. I felt the words like a blow.
Rhys slid a hand against my back, having appeared so fast I didn't see him move. But before he could reply, Moore said quietly,
Don't you ever say that sort of bullshit again, Amryn.
There was nothing on Moore's face beyond cold calm. Fury. I'd never seen her look so terrifying. She'd been furious with the mortal queens, but this was the face of the High Lord's third in command.
If you're cranky because you're hungry, then tell us, Moore went on with that frozen quiet. But if you say anything like that again, I will throw you in the God's damned Sidra. I'd like to see you try.
A little smile was Moore's only answer. Amryn slid her attention to me.
We need your sisters.
If not for this, then to convince others to join us, of the risk. Since any would-be ally might have some difficulty believing us after so many years of lies.
Apologize, said Moore.
More, I murmured.
Apologize, she hissed at Amryn.
Amryn said nothing. More took a step toward her and I said, She's right. They both looked to me, brows raised. I swallowed. Amryn is right. I walked out of Rhys's touch, realizing he'd kept silent to let me sort it out. Let me figure out how to deal with both of them as family. But mostly as their high lady. Moore's face tightened, but I shook my head. I can ask my sisters. See if they have any sort of power, see if they'd be willing to talk to others about what they endured. But I won't force them to help if they do not wish to participate. The choice will be theirs. I glanced at my mate, the male who had always presented me with a choice. Not as a gift, but as my own God's given right.
Reese's violet eyes flickered in acknowledgement. But I'll make our desperation clear. Amryn huffed, hardly more than a bird of prey puffing its feathers.
Compromise, Amryn, Reese purred. It's called compromise.
She ignored him.
If you want to start convincing your sisters, get them out of the house. Being cooped up never helped anyone.
Reese said smoothly,
I'm not entirely sure Valaris is prepared for Nesta Archeron.
My sister is not some feral animal, I snapped. Reese recoiled a bit, the other suddenly finding the carpet, the divan, the books incredibly fascinating.
I didn't mean that.
I didn't answer. Moore frowned in disapproval at Reese, who I felt watching me carefully, but asked me,
What of Elaine?
I shifted slightly, pushing past the words still hanging between me and Reese. I can ask, but she might not be ready to be around so many people. I clarified, she was supposed to be married next week.
So she keeps saying, over and over, Amryn grumbled.
I shot her a glare. Careful. Amryn blinked up at me in surprise, but I went on. So, we need to find a way to patch up the wall before Highburn uses the cauldron to break it, and fight this war before any other territories join Highburn's assault, and eventually get the cauldron itself. Anything else? Reese said behind me, his own voice carefully casual.
That covers it. As soon as a force can be assembled, we take on Highburn.
The Illyrian legions are nearly ready, Cassian said.
No, Reese said. I mean a bigger force. A force not just from the Night Court, but from all of Prithian. Our only decent shot at finding allies in this war.
None of us spoke. None of us moved, as Reese said simply.
Tomorrow, invitations go out to every High Lord in Prithian for a meeting in 2 weeks. It's time to see who stands with us and make sure they understand the consequences if they don't.
Chapter 17. I let Cassian carry me to the house 2 hours later, just because he admitted he was still working to strengthen his wings and needed to push himself. Heat rippled off the tiled roofs and red stone as we soared high over them, the sea breeze a cool kiss against my face. We'd barely finished debating 30 minutes ago, only stopping when Moore's stomach had grumbled as loudly as a breaking thunderhead. We'd spent our time weighing the merits of where to meet, who to bring along to the meeting with the High Lords. Invitations would go out tomorrow, but not specify the meeting place. There was no point in selecting one, Reese said, when the High Lords would no doubt refuse our initial selection and counter with their own choice of where to gather. All we had chosen was the day and the time. The 2 weeks a cushion against the bickering that was sure to ensue. The rest? We'd just have to prepare for every possibility. We'd quickly returned to the townhouse to change before heading back up to the house, and I'd found Nuala and Caradwyn waiting in my room, smiles on their shadowy faces. I'd embraced them both, even if Reese's hello had been less enthusiastic. Not for dislike of the half-wraiths, but I'd snapped at him in Amryn's apartment. He hadn't seemed angry, and yet I'd felt him carefully watching me these past few hours. It made it strange to look at him. Strange enough that the appetite I'd been steadily building had gone a bit queasy. I'd challenged him before, but not as High Lady. Not with the tone. So I didn't get to ask him about it, as Nuala and Caradwyn helped me dress, and he headed into the bathing room to wash up. Not that there was much finery to bother with.
I'd opted for my Illyrian leather pants and a loose white shirt, and a pair of embroidered slippers that Cassian kept snorting at as we flew. When he did so for the third time in 2 minutes, I pinched his arm and said, "It's hot. Those boots are stuffy." His brows rose. The portrait of innocence.
"I didn't say anything."
"You grunted. Again."
"I've been living with Moore for 500 years. I've learned the hard way not to question shoe choices."
He smirked.
"However stupid they may be."
"It's dinner, unless there's some battle planned afterward."
"Your sister will be there. I'd say that's battle aplenty."
I casually studied his face, noting how hard he worked to keep his features neutral, to keep his gaze fixed anywhere but on my own. Rhys flew nearby, far enough to remain out of earshot as I said, "Would you use her to see if she can somehow fix the wall?" Hazel eyes shot to me, fierce and clear.
"Yes. Not only for our sakes, but she needs to get out of the house. She needs to..."
Cassian's wings kept up a steady booming beat, the new sections only detectable by their lack of scarring.
"She'll destroy herself if she stays cooped up in there."
My chest tightened. I thought through my words. "The day she was changed, she... I felt something different with her." I fought against the tensing in my muscles as I recalled those moments. The screaming and the blood and the nausea as I watched my sisters taken against their will as I could do nothing. As we... I swallowed down the fear. The guilt. It was like everything she was, that steel and fire, it became magnified, cataclysmic, like looking at a house cat and suddenly finding a panther standing there instead. I shook my head, as if it would clear away the memory of the predator, the rage simmering in those blue-gray eyes.
"I will never forget those moments,"
Cassian said quietly, scenting or sensing the memories wreaking havoc on me.
"As long as I live."
"Have you seen any glimpse of it since?"
"Nothing."
The house loomed, golden lights at the walls of windows and doorways beckoning us closer.
"But I can feel it. Sometimes."
He added a bit ruefully.
"Usually when she's pissed at me. Which is most of the time."
"Why?" They'd always been at each other's throats, but this... Yes, the dynamic between them had been different earlier, sharper. Cassian shook his dark hair out of his eyes, slightly longer than the last time I'd seen it.
"I don't think Nesta will ever forgive me for what happened in Highburn. To her, but mostly to Elaine."
"Your wings were shredded. You were barely alive." For that was guilt, ravaging and poisonous in each of Cassian's words. What the others had been fighting against in the loft. "You were in no position to save anyone."
"I made her a promise."
The wind ruffled Cassian's hair as he squinted at the sky.
"And when it mattered, I didn't keep it."
I still dreamed of him trying to crawl toward her, reaching for her, even in the semi-unconscious state the pain and blood loss had thrown him into, as Rhysand had once done for me during those last moments with Amarantha. Perhaps only a few wing beats separated us from the broad landing veranda, but I asked, "Why do you bother?"